using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It is Tuesday, the 14th of September, year of our Lord, 2021, day 549 of the new world orders that are being pushed on us. And today we're going to talk about pushing back. I wanted to get to this yesterday. Ran out of time, but there's a lot of ways that you can push back. And there are also ways that you should not push back. And so we're going to talk about both of those. We need to be as wise as serpents, but as harmless as doves. So let's talk about how that breaks down. And then we're going to talk about the breakdown in the narrative and the pushback now by some governors. What is it really going to take for us to effectively push back against this? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Joe Biden announces a civil war. Now, this is the Babylon Bee headline, but it's not very far off, as usual, from the truth. They have him saying, right after he put out the vaccine mandates, outrageous penalties for each and every violation of $14,000, to try to run this through the Department of Labor, specifically through OSHA. They have Biden saying in their satire piece, to enforce this, we're just going to have ourselves a little civil war. It's been a while since we had one of those. Let's just fight it out until all the unvaccinated people are dead, or we're all dead, which will stop the spread of the COVID. Win-win, folks. Biden assured the American people that they will lose the upcoming civil war as they don't have any F-15s or nukes. Any unvaccinated Americans who survive would be sent to special camps where they will learn the importance of getting vaccinated. This is uncomfortably close to the truth. I've been saying for the longest time that when we had Biden, and it began with some of these other people who were running for president, you had Eric Swalwell before he threw his hat in the ring for just a moment, before he was thrown out of the ring by public opinion. It was Eric Swalwell. He began saying, yeah, we'll use the military that we've got against our own American citizens. And then that mantle was picked up by another pathetic wannabe, Beto O'Rourke. And then Biden jumped in with it. And when you look at what they are pushing for, they really want this badly. And so I want to begin by saying a couple of things about what we should not do. Both Tom Luongo, who writes has a blog called Gold, Goats, and Guns, as well as Doug Wilson, have both talked about how we do not want to resist this. And understand, folks, I'm not talking about passivity. I'm talking about being wise about what we do to resist this. No, we have to resist this, and we have to do it now. And we have to do it in a very firm way. But there are certain things that we're going to do that will backfire on us. Let's go with Tom Luongo first. He talks about how in many situations in his own life, he has been volatile, opinionated. He lost his temper with people. He said it's been a hard-fought lesson to learn that confrontation is not only a poor persuasion technique, it is aggressively counterproductive. And he says, and I'm still working on this. He says, but there's always a limit in every negotiation, even though he says a lot of times the way I see this, he says, when I start getting angry with people and yelling at him, I kind of think of it in my mind as negotiation. But of course, they see the anger, and that's what stops it. But he goes, every time you negotiate, there's always a limit, and there's a moment when all the frustration melts away, and it does turn into genuine anger. cold, hard, implacable anger. The energy to negotiate dissipates because there is no possible solution. He said Biden played the exasperated parent card this last week on Thursday when he talked about, well, that's just it. You know, my patience is thin. We've been patient with you people. You haven't done it. Don't make me come down there. That's where he is at this moment. But he says bullies are always daring you to throw the first punch. They need to justify the next act of violence against you. Meeting their violence with violence is acting out of frustration. They want us reacting to their false reality. Don't do this. And so Doug Wilson, before this happened, about 10 days before this happened, on August the 30th, Doug Wilson put out what he said, I think this is maybe the most important blog post I've put out. It was titled, Three Chess Moves Ahead. And no, this is not 4D chess like Alex was talking about. Oh yeah, he's really lying to, you know, Biden is just saying this, he's not really going to do it. You know, just like you had Trump always saying things, but he's really not going to do it. He's really lying to the other people. He's not lying to you. He's not going back on his campaign promises or any principles that he said he believed in, assuming that you think that he believed in some principles. No, this is actually thinking about where this is going. So Doug Wilson says, so here's what I believe to be our situation. And he said this again 10 days before a new gauntlet was thrown down by Biden. He said, I believe that middle America is being deliberately exasperated in order to provoke an unseemly and gaudy reaction sometime prior to the midterms. Now, this is where I differ with Doug Wilson. He's very much focused on the electoral outcomes and how this is all going to reflect with the elections. And that is a way that these people are playing it, both the Republicans and Democrats. They always look at elections. We need to look beyond the elections because, as you saw last year, and as you even saw the beginning of this year, there really isn't much difference between the Republicans and Democrats, just like there's not much difference between the conservatives and the Labor Party in the UK. Or you pick any country and any two parties, and you'll find that they are all on the side of the UN, on Davos, the World Economic Forum, and Bill Gates, and the rest of these organizations, WHO and so forth. They're all on that side. They're all on the same side with that. And so there's only a little limited amount of difference between these two parties. It's the speed at which you're moving, really. And we also, I firmly believe, that you're now seeing resistance from Republicans only because Biden is president. These Republicans that are now pushing back, and we got about 20 different governors who are pushing back against these mandates, they would never have pushed back against this if the same type of thing had been done by Trump. And don't tell me if you think that Trump wouldn't have done exactly the same type of thing, pushing it through corporations. Well, I'm sorry. I strongly disagree. It was always, always, always about corporate coercion. Always about that. And I said it's going to run primarily that way. And that's really where we are right now. I mean, they have not mandated this directly. Too many legal challenges with that. They're going to do it through a back door, and that back door is corporate coercion. They can use their leverage with corporations, especially the big corporations, but now they're moving it down to the smaller ones as well. Anyway, getting back to Doug Wilson's opinion here, he thinks it's going to factor into the midterms, and that will be a factor because there is a competition between these different groups. It's not that one of them is good. It's not that either of them are on our side. You know, there's a competition between the Corleone family and the Tartaglias, or Hyman Roth. It didn't mean that one of them, you know, was good. They were both evil. They were just fighting over the same turf. They hated each other. They would kill each other if and when they could. Same thing is true of the Democrats and Republicans. Had somebody write me a note saying, you know, I see your point about Trump now. The only thing that I hold back on is the fact that, you know, the Democrats just hate him so much. So he's, you know, there's got to be something there that's good about him that they hate. No, they simply hate him because he is the other mafia side, the other mafia family. And quite frankly, you know, he is, we don't necessarily have to just have two families, right? That's why the Republicans hate him as well. It isn't that he is an anti-statist. He's very statist. And he laid so many different foundations for it. So just keep that in mind when you start drawing your lines and when you start thinking that the elections are a solution, certainly not at the federal level. And we'll see about the state levels as well. Because we have a recall today. We'll talk a little bit about that perhaps coming up. We aren't going to have any solutions today. Today is the final voting day. The dead people have been voting for quite some time, apparently, in California. As people are going to say, you already voted. But let's get back to where we are in this. So Doug Wilson says, they're trying to deliberately exasperate the middle class. They're trying to pick a fight. They're trying to provoke unrest. The same thing that Tom Longo is saying. We all see this. They're trying to pick a fight with us. They've been talking and bragging about how they're going to fight with us for a couple of years now. And this is where it's headed. It says they're doing so in order to try to be able to justify the measures that they want to do that are genuinely repressive. Repressive measures in the aftermath of some big incident could be trumpeted as saving the republic from her enemies. And of course, this is not even a theory. We've already seen this happen, as he points out in his essay on January the 6th. And by the way, this is what I said about January the 6th, that it would be done this way. I said it the morning of January the 6th. I said it before that. It's one of the reasons why I was fired, because I opposed that. I opposed all the Stop the Steal stuff, especially January the 6th. Because on January the 6th, everything was completely wrapped up. There was no possibility for anybody to challenge any of this stuff on that day. It was a ceremonial formality of presenting the votes. And so the whole purpose of having that there was absolutely no purpose except for the people who make a living shouting and screaming through bullhorns in order to get money and an audience. There was no other end that could come out of that except more anger and more frustration. And so I was opposing that because I figured that anger and frustration would boil over, that there was absolutely nothing to be achieved on that day. If you are going to fight a battle, you ought to have an end game. You ought to have some objective that is achievable before you're going to put yourself in the battle. That's the first rule. So pick your fights. Pick your fights and don't fight the way they want you to fight. That's the first rule. But of course, you're misled by people who are on their side. So it was just extraordinary to me that the violence was so limited. With all that frustration, there was absolutely nothing that could be accomplished. You know, quite frankly, just going back to another situation, the Bundy standoff. Right. Whenever I've seen protests, there is typically never any achievable objective. Clive and Bundy wisely made an achievable objective on that particular day. We're going to stand here, we're going to stand firm, and we want one thing. I want my cattle back. They had already told all the mainstream media, you know, they came in after the fact, and you had this big media, you know, presence and helicopters and Sean Hannity calling in and so forth. And then they got together with the mainstream media, and they told them, we're going to yield, we're going to remove these fines and so forth, and we're going to let them graze on the property. But they didn't say they were going to give them back their cattle. And so when they said, yeah, we're going to let them graze on the cattle, so all of the on the land, so all of the mainstream media left. And they wanted to try to defuse the situation. They wanted to make sure that they didn't have any media to see what was going to happen on Saturday. That was when the big crowd was coming. So they didn't want media there to record the crowd, at the very least. And so Clive and Bundy got up, and he said, I'm not telling anybody what to do, but we're going to go get the cattle. And this is where we're going to be in case you want to go there. So it was a definable objective. And it was a standoff, a stand down, face to face with these people till they yielded in the face of superior numbers. And so if you've got an objective, a clear objective, that is the key thing. And that was a very risky thing to do. That could have easily erupted into gunfire and looked like it was going to. They were threatening to shoot us. People were hiding behind concrete barriers and so forth. The Fox News guy was, I'm not with them. Take me out of here. Anyway, the guy who stayed behind. I mention that simply because when we look at a protest, and I'm going to talk about what I think is the right way and the right place and the right reasons to do a protest. January the 6th was none of those. It wasn't the right place, really. And I'll, you know, obviously, as we see what's happening here, and I'll talk more about that. But it wasn't any achievable objective that could have come out of that. Instead, what it was going to be a big rally for the people who make money off of rallies, the media people. It wasn't going to change a single thing on that day. And I said, morning of, I said, you're going to see agent provocateurs that are going to do this. You're going to see people get frustrated who join along with them. And then this whole thing will be used to demonize everyone in this country, which is exactly what happened. If that reaction finally happens, says Doug Wilson, say a right-wing protest at a federal building somewhere turns violent, it will be used as an excuse for emergency methods. The reaction from middle America will have to be violent enough to justify the emergency measures, but not violent enough to accomplish much of anything for the participants. It can be a totally pyrrhic exercise, not even a pyrrhic victory. And a key part of all this, as we see, what they're using as they surrounded, you know, the clown show they did surrounding the Capitol with all of the troops and the fences and everything else that they did for the longest period of time. The key part of that was to paint the GOP as a violent terrorist group. So as Doug Wilson goes on, he said, so the takeaway lesson for conservatives is this. Don't take the bait. Under no circumstances should we take the bait. I think I may have mentioned before that we should not take the bait. He said the initial reaction to this kind of thinking from many reasonable middle-of-the-road types will be to lament the fact that the conspiracy nutters appeared to have captured another one. And he said, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. He said, this is not wild speculation about conspiracies in back rooms. He said, this play has already been run on us successfully. I might add twice within the last year. And then he talks about not just January the 6th, but, of course, the alleged COVID emergency, as he puts it, used to set aside longstanding election laws and procedures and introduced a whole new way of voting in the middle of a crisis without any of the established safeguards. And this is why I say Trump allowed this to happen. Trump went through this process that was guaranteed to result in his defeat. Everybody said it. I said it. William Barr said it. Everybody said this is going to. Bernie Sanders said this is the way this is going to happen. Everybody knew that that was going to result in his defeat. And not only that, not only did he set aside longstanding election laws and procedures, but he played along with Fauci's Simon Says rules. No political convention, no political rallies. So he says, Doug Wilson goes on to say, did you know that according to the National Terrorism Advisory System, under the Department of Homeland Security, the people who are opposed to COVID measures, who claim that there was election fraud in 2020, and who mark religious holidays are, quote, potential terror threats. And so we saw January the 6th, the Capitol breach that day was a travesty. He said, in fact, the whole point of this post is to try to head off a similar travesty on a national level. And he said, it was even worse than a crime. It was a blunder, a blunder. So he says, by the way, it's a trap. Do not take the bait. Do not think about taking the bait. Do not pray about taking the bait. Do not organize any bait-taking protest. Do not have any red ball caps made that say, we're going to take the bait. Now he says, other people will say that I'm giving up. He says, they'll see don't take the bait as counseling surrender, as a form of defeatism. We need to rise up now, they say. He says, fine, rise up, do something, but don't take the bait. Do you understand the difference between doing something, between resisting, and between taking doing all that and taking the bait? Travis, could you plug in my earpiece, my audio? It's come unplugged. We're at a moment where their swollen and despotic appetite cannot be denied, and they will soon refuse to be bound by even the forms of constitutional restraint. They have been circumventing the substance of constitutional liberty for decades now, but they've not yet gotten to the point where they've been willing to disregard the external forms of liberty. In other words, there's a lot of different things that they can do to remove our liberty, slice it away bit by bit, do it behind the scenes. But once you start seeing the types of things that you're seeing in Australia, where you just have armed police taking the streets, that's it, thank you. We see armed police taking the streets, beating people who are out on the streets. That kind of thuggish totalitarian behavior is what he's talking about, the external forms of liberty. When they do that, as I believe is close to happening, then at that point, it is safe to say that all bets are off. At that point, active and self-conscious resistance is fully justified. And as far as I'm concerned, there is no problem with Gideon threshing out his grain in his wine vat. The analogy there, for those of you not familiar with the story, Gideon is, at that particular time, their country, Israel, had been overrun by Midianites who were basically taking everything they had. They were coming in and taking all their food away, the crops that they'd grown, leaving them to essentially starve. Turned them into, I don't know, tax slaves or something. They were taking a little bit too much. Kind of like, and we're going to talk about Biden's fantasies about tax rates. Yeah, you want to pay 60% taxes, combined state and federal? Well, you know, move to New York or California. It'll be kind of like it was with the Midianites. And so to avoid that, you know, he took his grain that he wanted to thresh, and instead of doing it out in the open, he took it into a wine vat so they couldn't see what he was doing. And so he's hiding in the wine vat, threshing this stuff out. And God appears to him and says, hello, mighty warrior, without any hint of sarcasm, right? So there'll be many creative ways, he said, to thwart the despotism. You know, he can do stuff in secret, passively resist this stuff by living your life in secret. You can have sick outs. You can have strikes. You can withhold taxes. You can have lesser magistrates who are kicking back on this. And right near the end, you can have massive street protests, because massive street protests will have their place in this. But to put them in the wrong place is to take the bait. You see, to put them in the wrong place. And let me just give you an analogy. In the UK, they had between 500,000 and 1 million people marching through the streets of London. They did not necessarily, you know, they didn't go to number 10 Downing Street or to Parliament while Parliament was there, or to the Queen's Palace while she was there. That tends to provoke a sense of paranoia and fear among the people who are trying to protect those individuals, and that leads to violence. So there are places to do street protests, and there's places to not do street protests unless you want to have a confrontation, which is what I think January 6th is really about. He says, if they really want you to do it, you should think at least three times before you do it. And they are wanting, they are wishing, and they are pleading for us to respond to their provocations in a way that gives them something they can work with. Don't do it. Don't take the bait. Let me just add an analogy here that that Doug Wilson does not have. And that would be Pearl Harbor. You know, many times in you know, Doug talks about the Reichstag fire, things like false flag things. But I think perhaps in this particular case, I think a better analogy is what happened with Pearl Harbor, with the entrance of America into World War II. FDR wanted us in the war on the side of the Allies, but the American people had been lied into a war for which there was no reason and for which we had absolutely no business being involved in World War I. And so they're very skeptical of that again, regardless of what was happening. Just didn't want to hear it. And so FDR was doing things that were kind of passively, aggressively baiting the Germans as well as the Japanese to attack us. The Germans were a little bit too smart to take the bait. And the Japanese, even against the counseling of, their chief leaders, Yamamoto and others, he said, you're going to wake up a sleeping giant. It was the type of thing where he said, well, all right, well, you know, if you're going to do something like that, you better go big, and you better, if you're going to strike the king, you better kill the king type of analogy. And their initial strike at Pearl Harbor was devastating, but it got the battleships, which were the main tool of the previous war, but it missed the aircraft carriers. It could have been really bad, but it was a provocation that was there. There were other aspects where FDR deliberately stood down and so forth. And we're not going to get into the whole history of that, but just take a look at the different approaches by the Germans and the Japanese. The Germans' approach to it was as the U.S. was sending supplies to England, their approach was to sink the supply ships. Now, that would not be perceived by people as a reason to go to war, because you could couch that as something that was defensive. Whereas Pearl Harbor galvanized America. I mean, my dad went out the next day and signed up for the Navy. And so it backfired on them. The Japanese took the bait. The Germans didn't take the bait. The Germans sunk the ships that were going. They took action. They didn't just sit there passively. But the Japanese took the bait. And then there was a unified America to get behind FDR. We do not want to take the bait. We don't want America to unify behind Biden and the Democrats, and to paint all of us, as we've seen, how eager they are to do this. They tip their hand. The only good thing to come out of January the 6th is to tip the hand of these people, to show how anxious they are to overreact and to over, exaggerate what actually happened. He said, finally in his editorial, he says, all this dystopian talk, you people have lost your mind, haven't you? You keep talking like America could turn into Australia. That's not even a possibility. There's no way that such a thing could even be on the table. Doug Wilson says, yeah, okay. Listen to yourself. Remember, it was just a couple of years ago that it was unthinkable that Australia could turn into Australia today. So how did that happen? Always remember how the responsible voices like to coo to us. First, they'll tell us that situation X will never happen. Then they'll tell us that it might happen, but it's too soon to act upon it. To act now would be premature. It would be irresponsible. Then they tell us once it has happened, it's too late to do anything about it. And now we have to reckon with the post-Constitution, post-America, post-Christian realities that are on the ground. He says the video version of the post that he did a couple of weeks ago, and I gave you some of the information that he had about fake vaccine IDs, he said that was taken down by YouTube. It was on its way to becoming the most watched episode he'd ever put on YouTube. This is obviously too much for somebody. To be clear, this is like AT&T deciding that a conversation that you're having with a friend contains too many errors, and as a result of their concern, they decide that they will end your call. Well, it's even worse than that, Doug. They decide they'll disconnect your phone service. I've had my phone service essentially disconnected 7 times. I'm not applying to do that again. But see, that's the key thing. And if we look at this latest Rasmussen poll that came out over the weekend, Democrats see Trump supporters and the unvaccinated as the biggest threat to the nation. Now listen to this. This is how this ranks out for them. They asked the Democrats, what is the most serious threat? 57% of them said Trump supporters. 56% of them said unvaccinated Americans. And then the next closest thing is down at 44%, the Taliban in China at 44%. So they see the unvaccinated as significantly more dangerous to them, and their political, the other political party, as significantly more dangerous to them than China, than Russia, than illegal immigrants or socialists, of course, because they love illegal immigrants and socialists, or defunding the police activists. Now, the Republicans, on the other hand, they see the two most dangerous things as being the Taliban and China. Interestingly enough, Republicans think that the Taliban is more dangerous than China. This is how delusional the political parties are. How in the world can the Taliban be more dangerous than China? Come on. I mean, China is going to be there using Bagram Air Force Base and getting all of the minerals, which is why we were there. It is China. It is China. That's the key thing. But they see the Taliban. Think about this. The GOP voters that they asked. So the Taliban as the most dangerous thing, more dangerous than China, more dangerous than defund the police activists. They see the Taliban as more dangerous than Russia. So Russia is 33. The Taliban is 52% of the people said it's the most dangerous thing. Registered voters that they had Republican. except, you know, Taliban doesn't have nuclear missiles. I hate to tell the GOP voters. I'm sorry, that was all that I was going through, the all category. The GOP, it's even worse. They see Taliban as 66%, just the GOP. So 52% overall see, you know, Republicans and Democrats and independents see the Taliban as the most dangerous thing to us. More dangerous, again, than China, than the defund the police activist, than Russia, than Trump supporters, than illegal immigrants or socialists or unvaccinated Americans. And yet, for the GOP, 66% think that the Taliban is the most dangerous thing out there. They only see socialists as 44% of them say it's the most dangerous. Not the most dangerous, but as a serious threat. Let's just say that. You can't have these things add up to more than 100%. Now, what they're saying is it a serious threat. 66% of the people see Taliban as a dangerous threat, but only 44% see socialism as a dangerous threat. Only 58% of Republicans see China as a dangerous threat, but 66% see the Taliban. So getting back to the Democrats, though, they think that the two most dangerous things, the highest number of votes for a serious threat went to Trump supporters at 57, and then unvaccinated Americans at 56. So all of that, just to say, and I hope it didn't confuse you with the numbers and my labeling of them, but all that is just to say that they're responding to the media. Why is it that everybody is saying that there are more people that agree that the Taliban is a serious threat than anything else? Because that's what they see the media saying. Why is the media saying that? Because that's what the military-industrial complex wants them to say. Yeah, they're repeating the talking points of the military-industrial complex. Taliban, Taliban, Taliban. And so they don't see, even the Republicans don't see socialism among us as the biggest threat. That's way, way, way down. Way down. Vaccine Impact says, what does 9/11 and the global war on terror have in common with vaccines and their war on viruses? Well, of course, both of them are being used to take away the Constitution, the rule of law, come right up to the level of martial law and a little bit over, a little bit beyond that creepy line, as Eric Schmidt said. Both of them are being used to sell all kinds of, not just a police state, not just a post-constitutional way of living, but of course they're both being used to set up a surveillance state. And as you know, They're both being used to reset us and to push us into the fourth industrial revolution, into the fourth turning, into a society that has been reset and rebuilt with you owning nothing, going nowhere, not being allowed to eat anything except what they hand you. Some kind of a soylent green thing. No meat, no meat. The events of September 11th brought about sweeping changes in how the U.S. government collects and uses data on its system, all in the name of protecting us from terrorists. Likewise, vaccines have a long history in this country of being mandated to protect us from other unseen enemies, namely viruses. From the moment a child is born in the U.S. hospital and given its first vaccine, a record of that person's life is started that can be tracked throughout their life. 2 years before 9/11, in July of 1999, Barbara Lowe Fisher, co-founder of the National Vaccine Information Center, wrote an expose titled "The National Electronic Vaccine Tracking Registry: The History of Forced Vaccination, How the Plan to Use Forced Vaccination Gave Birth to the National ID, a Government Health Records Database, and the End of Medical Privacy." She wrote all those different articles 22 years ago. It was all very clear where this was headed. Doctors, by the way, you know, we start talking about risks, as they point out here, doctors can't predict who will become vaccine injured. Again, it is Russian roulette. And when you look at the Supreme Court case that Alan Dershowitz and so many of these people dearly love, Jacobson versus Massachusetts. And in that Supreme Court case in 1905, you had Massachusetts was mandating smallpox vaccines. And this guy did not want to get the smallpox vaccine. And there was a fine associated with it, which sounds very small in today's devalued dollar. But it was pretty expensive back then, $50 fine, which today would be at least a $500 fine. So he fought them on the principle. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said not that they could force vaccinate him. That is the way that it is put out by Alan Dershowitz and others. That's a lie. What the Supreme Court said was, well, they can't force vaccinate you, but they can fine you if you don't take the vaccine. And what was the legacy of that? Well, as Vaccine Impact points out, one of the legacies of that decision, in case you think that that's a good precedent, is forced sterilization. You had 22 years later, Oliver Wendell Holmes embraced the utilitarian rationale of Jacobson versus Massachusetts to allow the forced sterilization of Carrie Buck, a Virginia woman that doctors thought was mentally retarded, for the purpose of eugenics. So we have the vaccine tracking systems, we have the abuse of police powers, and we have also several hundred vaccines waiting to be mandated. If you don't understand where this is going, and again, I constantly refer to ID 2020, that was Bill Gates's push for a very long time to have a global ID available by 2020. He's well on the way, really, even though 2020 is done. They laid all the foundation for it. They're well on the way with it. And then his other big push was IA 2030, Immunization 2030. The tagline at that organization, you can go to the website and look at it, everyone, everywhere, every age. The implication is every vaccine. He doesn't say that. But that's the bottom line. Every vaccine that these greedy murderers of big pharmaceutical companies, their greed knows no bounds, and neither does their imagination and what they will demand that you take from them if we allow this precedent to be set. This is why all these people who are, well, I don't know what I should do about this. You know, my job is on the line, and it's really tough. And I understand it is tough. I'm not minimizing that at all. That's a tough decision. It's going to have severe consequences for everybody. Even the people who are cheering this along are going to have severe consequences they don't realize. But the people who are looking at the situation right now, well, let's see. I've got to get not one, but two vaccines. Isn't that unusual? Don't you think that's unusual? I thought it was unusual from the very beginning. And now we got a third one that's coming up. And it's coming up September the 20th. Fully vaccinated in Israel is now 3 shots, soon to be 4 shots. There will never be any end to this. And the people who are cheering this don't realize that there won't be any end to this, even if they were to stop at 4 shots for COVID. They're going to come up with other vaccines, and they will demand those. And again, they have no liability. They don't do any testing. They don't care at all what happens to you. And it's not possible for any of them to even know exactly what's going to happen. That's why you go through a testing period. So there are several hundred vaccines that are waiting to be mandated. So what do we do about this? Well, you know, there is one way that we can approach this. I want you to take a look at what is happening at an Australian beach. You have some lifeguard or police figure takes their mask down so that you can hear them, finally. You know, people with their masks on are mumbling. Takes her mask down, and she's barking orders to everybody on this very, very crowded beach that they need to put their masks on. And even though the people who put this thing together, the mainstream media put this together, they show one lady, you know, grabbing her mask and putting it on. But when you look at the people in the background in this video clip, they're walking along, nobody's putting on their mask, they're completely ignoring her. And that's the point. Watch this.
To everybody that's lying on the beach, please remember, you are in breach of the public health order if you are not wearing your mask.
Please don't care at all. Oh, there's one. They found one person who did that. Maybe they did that afterwards.
Also remember,
I don't see anybody putting the mask on. Look at this beach.
This mess yet. And if you are outside of the 5 kilometer LGA, again, you are in breach of the public health order. Thank you for complying, and thank you for helping us to keep the LGA.
If you're more than 3 miles from home, yeah. You've got 3 miles worth of beach there. I don't think those people are further than 3 miles from home, probably. So that's one way to approach it. And I think that's a really good way to do it. Here's another way to do it, which I don't think is a good way. Nebraskans are going to take a stand against COVID vaccine mandates. Good. They're going to plan a major rally. Good. At the state capitol. Bad. Bad idea. Again, let's try to have a little bit of wisdom about this. Do these rallies, do them anywhere. Televise them, do everything you can to promote them, try to get as many people to go as possible, but don't try to kick the ant bed, okay? Don't put it right at their Capitol building so that they don't have an excuse. Because if you have your own rally somewhere else and the police come in and attack you and you're streaming this, it's pretty clear who the aggressor is. But this is a particular situation. This is Nebraskans against government overreach. Allie French has organized it. And I agree with what she has done to fight this. She's running for state legislature. I agree with that. Good for her for doing that. I don't want to criticize her for doing any of that. That's a good job. But I just say that because she's running for state legislature, maybe she's a little bit too focused on that Capitol building there. And you may realize that, again, you know, they can paint you as the aggressor anywhere, but especially if you're going there to the state capitol, it makes it easier for them to do that. Just look at what they tried to frame. Look at what the FBI did in Michigan, right? Before the staged Whitmer kidnapping, which is a total bunch of nonsense. It was an FBI false flag. Prior to that, the false flag that the FBI wanted to organize was to storm the Capitol there in Michigan. That's exactly what they wanted. That's exactly what happened on January the 6th. That is what they want you to do. So don't take the bait. Don't keep doing the same thing over and over again. That's what they wanted in Michigan. It's what they got in Washington. Don't do this even in Nebraska. So we actually spent last week standing outside one of the public school district buildings in protest of the mask mandate that the superintendent acted like a dictator and implemented over the weekend. Well, that's fine. I would just suggest that you get the parents together, you protest this stuff off-site, not at their school, not at their Capitol building. Here's a good example of the right way to do it. A Minnesota Republican gives vaccine-concerned nurses a voice in a live event. This is Representative Eric Mortensen of Minnesota. And this is a guy who was kicked out by the Republican Party because he was too pro-freedom in all these lockdowns that happened. He got kicked out last May. Why? Because he defied lockdown measures. He advocated for small businesses to stay open. He even held a freedom party, quote-unquote, as a way of highlighting that he believed the measures imposed on citizens were unjust. He did everything right, in other words. That's why the Republicans kicked him out. But what he did was, instead of organizing people and going to the Capitol, he said he hosted a town hall event for nurses in the area, to give them a platform to express their concerns about mandatory vaccinations and their frustration over frequent hospital suppression of the fact that many of their patients were obviously suffering serious reactions to the vaccines. The event was live streamed, and during the nurse event he hosted, he mentioned personal choice and freedom over and over again. That was his orientation. He said, quote, so the idea was, well, why don't we try to do like a nurse town hall? He said, typically these town halls is, you know, some politician on a stage, and you guys are asking the politicians questions. But my thought is, why don't we kind of flip the script to facilitate a discussion and to ask you guys questions? You have an opportunity to air your grievances and your stories. So you see what he did? He organized a forum. He took people who were knowledgeable, people who were passionate about this, people who'd been on the front lines, nurses who are healthcare professionals. He gave them a platform instead of using an event to get an audience to put himself up on a platform or to pay somebody $50,000 so he could speak and get on television, that type of thing. It wasn't about him. It was about liberty. And he put the people out there who could speak to that and speak to the essence of this fraud. So he said, typically as a politician gets on the stage, or, you know, somebody with a bullhorn. But my thought is, why don't we just kind of flip the script and have you talk about your stories? He said, so here's what one of the nurses said. She said, so I'm a triage nurse. People will call in with concerns like, is this from COVID directly or is it from the vaccine? She said, and I feel like a lot of people from their doctors are getting discouraged or invalidated to say that those symptoms are specific to the vaccine or from the vaccine. She said that she and her colleagues were told to stop identifying the fact that vaccinated people were being diagnosed with COVID or having adverse effects. Don't talk about that. So it's important for people to understand how they are lying to us, deceiving us, and telling medical professionals, don't tell people what you're seeing here. She said, and then as far as transparency goes, we were also at one point reporting positive COVID cases of people that were vaccinated. And I feel, I don't know, must have been like 2 or 3 short weeks later, a mass email went out, said, we don't want to know anymore whether or not they're vaccinated. Another nurse explained that in all of her years of experience, she is concerned about the types of side effects that she's heard from other patients. She said, I also work telephone triage, and I hear the weirdest side effects. I used to work as an immunization coordinator. That's what she did. She coordinated vaccines. She said, for standard vaccines, we would see things like fever, sometimes chills or fatigue. So I would tell them, okay, just go to bed, take some time, you'll be fine. A couple of aspirins, call me in the morning. But she said, these side effects are, I don't even know what to do with this. You got people with lymph nodes that are swelling in your chest, in your neck, in your armpit, your foot hurts. I don't know what to tell them to do. So we tell them to go to the emergency room, and then it gets written off, and they don't track it as a vaccine injury. Nurses are concerned about the restrictions they face if they seek an exemption. By the way, if you want to get this full article, it is at LifeSite News. It's a good article. Shows the right way to do this and also what these nurses are saying. I'm just going to give you some of the highlights here. One nurse said, we expect to see an increase in patients seeking vaccination exemption letters. This is an email that was sent out by the sent by the administration, the hospital administration, to the staff, saying, "We expect to see an increase in patients seeking vaccination exemption letters. We have recommended against our clinicians from providing medical exemptions." So they're intimidating doctors. Even if somebody's got a known condition that we typically know is going to be triggered by even normal vaccines, like they already have autoimmune or something like that, diseases. Oh, no, no. Don't write them a medical exemption. This is financially incentivized medical malpractice. These people don't care about anything other than money. It is blood money. Blood money, what they're doing to people. They're deliberately giving people treatment that makes no sense, that disregards the welfare of the patient. And this is not about public health. This is about private profits, folks. This is about private profits for big pharmaceutical companies and the public officials who work with them and get their nest feathered. What do you think happened to the last two FDA commissioners? Look where they are. One of them is on the board of Pfizer, and the other one is now with a venture capital firm that funds Moderna. These were Trump's FDA people. Trump's FDA people. The only thing public health about this are the public health dictators. Anyway, so I said, we expect to see an increase in patients, but we recommend wanting an exemption, but we recommend our clinicians from providing medical exemptions, including pregnancy, unless a patient has a documented allergy to a specific ingredient. So we don't want you to give an exemption to somebody because they're pregnant. You vaccinate them. It wasn't that long ago that for standard vaccines, not this genetic code injection, but for standard vaccines, they had a warning label inside the package that said, this is not for vaccinated people. Do not give, not for pregnant women. They got me saying it now. Pregnant women, do not take this vaccine. So another nurse said, what I find is funny is that for these last 18 months, we were using PPE, you know, personal protective equipment, masks and other things. We were using PPE that was so ragged because it was used so many times that we were taping it to our face. Now we actually have PPE. We can use once and then get rid of it like it was supposed to be used. As a matter of fact, as I pointed out back in 2002 in Australia, they said even this N95 mask stuff doesn't catch viruses. And in terms of the spittle, after you've used it for 20 minutes, it gets so saturated with spittle that it actually pushes what is already saturated on the mask out. And it pushes it out as finer particles than you typically would have even if you were speaking without the mask. So it's counterproductive. But again, we'll use it and then we'll throw it away, maybe on a daily basis. Maybe they do it every 20 minutes. I don't think so. She doesn't say that. But she says, but now they're telling us that we're terrorists and that we're dangerous, even though now we have PPE. Last year we didn't even have PPE that worked, and we're using it for days and taping it to our face, and it's all ragged. But now they're telling us we're dangerous and we're going to kill people, so we got to get the vaccine. But the ultimatum is not going to kick in for 2 to 3 months. You know, in 75 days, you're going to get vaccinated or you're going to lose your job. Is this an emergency or not? And I've said this for the longest time. I've said, look at what Macron did. He said, well, in a month, we're going to implement these controls. And then a month after that, we're going to have these next controls and so forth, gradually moving into a forced vaccination status. If this is an emergency, you don't wait 2 months to do it. And the fact that you're phasing this thing in says that you're simply boiling the frogs. You're not reacting to a medical event. This is a political nudging, psychological nudging. So the ultimatum doesn't come for 2 or 3 months. Where I work, we are critical staffing levels. They're offering $20 an hour bonuses on top of our overtime. They're shutting down operating rooms because we don't have enough staff. They're begging us to work these extra shifts. So we're safe enough now. We're not killing patients now. But when a certain date comes along, we are no longer safe. How ridiculous. Another nurse says, how come no one is asking the nurses why they don't want the jab? You have healthcare systems that have very minimal people vaccinated. There are many departments where only 20% of the healthcare professionals are vaccinated. Why is that? These are people who, for a year and a half, have watched the virus, and for 9 months, they've watched the vaccinated. And they're making the decision, I'm not going to take the vaccine. Why is that? Why is that? That is the elephant in the room. Why the nurses don't want to have this. And I understand there's a little bit of a difference between the nurses and the doctors. I think that comes down to money, frankly. You know, the doctors have a lot more financial pressure on them. You know, they went into debt, many cases, you know, that much more debt for their college. They went into debt for very expensive equipment, a lot of other things. So they have both a carrot and a stick that is financial, right? They have a possibility of big economic rewards, but that isn't going to kick in for quite some time until they get over this initial cost. So they're under a lot more financial pressure than the nurses are. Not to minimize the fact that nurses need this job just like everybody does in order to live their life. I'm just saying the amounts of money that are there and the massive amount of preparation and investment by these doctors makes them more susceptible to going along with the system. As I pointed out, our friend who, they moved away a couple of years ago, but he was pressured by AT&T into getting the vaccine, even though he had rheumatoid arthritis, immediately had a very severe reaction. He's in the emergency room, and a masked doctor says to his wife, it's the vaccine, and it's this and it's that, but I can't say anything about that because, you know, they'll come after me. That's the kind of world we live in now. This is the kind of totalitarian society where even doctors cannot be honest in their profession. And it's being financially incentivized, especially for these hospitals. The hospitals are the ones who are making the big bucks off of this stuff with all the incentives that were put in there by Trump 549 days ago. Mullumbimby, if I'm pronouncing that right, it's in North South Wales. Or New South Wales, I should say. North South Wales. NSW. North Southwest. No, it's New South Wales. This is where Gladys is. Gladys Berejiklian. Played last week. I mean, you know, she's totally evil, but you just almost... she's like cartoon evil. She's like an Austin Powers villain. But she is evil. She's absolutely evil. So there's one town. They're in the midst of Berejiklian land, where the people are, the vast number of people there already are pushing back against this. So at the epicenter of one of these worst places in Australia, as it's reported by the Daily Mail, they said COVID deniers want to create an anti-vax paradise in Mullumbimby, northern New South Wales. Well, I don't know, they're COVID deniers, they're vax deniers. Vax deniers. Call me a vax denier. Call me anti-vax. I don't care. I've been anti-vax way before these genetic code injections came along. Anyway, Mullumbimby, 15-minute drive from Byron Bay. So you got your bearings now? I have no idea where Byron Bay is either. Sorry, those of you who live in Australia. Not my neck of the woods, as they say. It's been touted as a potential safe haven for people with alternative views who insist on defying science-backed government orders. No, I'm sorry. This is, take your pick. Is it a government order or is it science-backed? Anyway, I don't take health orders. I take medical advice. I absolutely refuse doctor's orders or government orders. When they don't have the authority, I don't follow the orders. End of story. The region is considered to be the anti-vaccine capital of Australia with as little as 39% of residents fully inoculated. But soaring house prices, where the median price is over $1.5 million, I think that's Australian, that's still very high, could hinder many COVID deniers' plans. A call to arms among disbelievers. See, this is couched in religious terms. It's the people who are pushing the vaccine, the people who believe the vaccine is the elixir for eternal life. That they're the ones with a religion. They're the ones not drinking the Kool-Aid, but injecting the Kool-Aid. It's gaining traction within a private Facebook group. So this is Daily Mail's call, plea for Zuckerberg to shut them down. Too late, though. These people are actually living their lives, establishing a community. There are businesses advertising that they will only serve unvaccinated customers, others assuring that they will not ask questions. They show a picture of the place, and they say, well, yeah, they've got signs up, no forced vaccinations. They've got a hypodermic needle with a circle around it and a slash line on it. Stop this politician, stop that politician. They say that anti-vaxxers have suggested that if enough people move from their own towns to Mullumbimby, then they'd be able to take over and drive out locals who don't align with their values. We should all move, outnumber the sheep, and vote for free people to counsel us, said one woman. This is kind of like what was proposed and is still working in New Hampshire with the Free State Project. They wanted to try to get 20,000 libertarians in. They said, if we get enough people in, the libertarians, that'll be a tipping point for the government. I looked at that, but it's a little bit too far north for me, number one. Number two, there is an Ayn Rand objectivism strain that seems to run through the group, that if I'm going to throw my lot in with a group, they're going to be Christians, not rabid atheists. I don't want to be a part of that group. That there is no security for atheists. They can get in their foxhole, and maybe they'll get converted, but there is no security for the atheists. I do not want to be a part of that group. With an elective COVID denier in power at a local level, the group hoped that they would be free to move about as they please without mandatory masks. And they show a sign here, we don't mask, we don't ask. Got a happy smiley face with a couple hands that have moved the mask down. It says, to our valued customers, the New South Wales government has mandated mask use indoors, but please be aware, if you're not wearing one, we will assume that you're exempt. No questions asked. We don't do judgments. We don't do shaming or discrimination here. So please know that you'll be warmly welcomed and respected however you show up. And then they say how you can get exemptions for not wearing a mask can be found below via a QR code. So instead of checking in with your QR code, find out where you can get your mask exemption. Brazilian President Bolsonaro, or as my transcription program calls him, Bows and Arrows, tells Pfizer that he's not going to encourage or mandate anything as long as Pfizer does not take responsibility for the possible side effects of the shots. That's the central issue. That should be where it stops for everybody. If you have half a brain, why would you allow somebody who doesn't have any liability, who rushed this thing through without any tests? And again, the left, all of you on the left, it was President Trump who pressured them, said, you approve this stuff for emergency use or you're fired. You do it today or you're fired. And these people have no liability. And so Bolsonaro, by the way, folks, Bolsonaro is the man that you thought Trump was. Yeah, he's somebody, he's not perfect, but he has integrity and he stands by what he said he was about, unlike Trump. Unlike Trump. Bolsonaro pointing that out, and I've talked before about the documents as both Brazil and Argentina and a third Latin American country exposed several months ago, and it was reported by Stat News, a trade publication, that they had the documents. They said Pfizer was telling these, holding a gun to the head of Brazil, Argentina, and a third country, saying that you will indemnify us, in other words, assume all the risks, not only for the vaccine that we've created, but also for any manufacturing errors that happen. You know, because we see now these strange substances showing up in Japan, some people dying, several people dying, it's three or four people died at least from that. So you're not going to hold us responsible for any manufacturing issues, any shipping issues, and on and on. And then going further to say, and you are going to set aside certain amounts of money in foreign bank accounts for us. Nothing to worry about there. I mean, these people don't sound like gangsters, plotting to skip town before the mob comes and gets them with the torches and pitchforks with what they just pulled over everybody, right? I mean, that's what Pfizer was doing. And then even demanding as security foreign real estate where embassies were and things like that in other countries. Again, so we can get out of your country. And they said no. And some people in the Brazilian as well as the Argentinian administrations exposed that. And so that's why Bolsonaro is saying, look, it comes down to this. These people don't believe in their products. I don't believe in their products. They have no liability. I'm not taking something from somebody with no liability. How Americans can resist the coronavirus shot mandates, a comprehensive guide. This is at LifeSite News. And let me just tell you that they have, in the wake of what happened on Thursday with Biden, saying he's ramping up the corporate coercion, LifeSite News has been very good on this. They have put, if you go to their site, LifeSiteNews.com, you'll see at the top a link to how Americans can resist the coronavirus shot mandates, a comprehensive guide, and another one as to how Canadians can do it. And so they have links there to legal organizations that will help you and things that are specific. There it is at the top there. See, that right underneath LifeSite, you have one in red, says how Americans can do it, and then right underneath it, you've got another one that's red about how Canadians can do it, get the exemption. And in case you want to know what this is going to look like, just take a look at what is going on again, Australia. Unfortunately for the Australians, the place where this has been rolled out the fastest, because it's the same thing is coming to all of us. Listen to this discussion about what church is going to be like in Australia under these rules.
Now, the New South Wales government's Path to Freedom will require churchgoers to prove they're fully vaccinated in order to attend a place of worship. It's prompted religious leaders to call for an exemption to the rule. While faith leaders have been strong in supporting the vaccination drive and compliance with health orders, they want to uphold their own commitment to minister to all. For more, I'm joined by the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, Kanishka Raffel. Good morning to you.
G'day, Kanishka.
Why is this such a problem for churches?
Oh, look, Koji, I think, you know, as you say, we've been compliant with the public health orders. We've tried to promote vaccination and get information out to people who've got concerns about that. I'm double vaccinated. And so we're completely supportive and thankful for the way the government's approached that. When we get to 70%, the rule for churches will be 4 square metres. That is one person per 4 square metres. So church buildings mostly won't be able to welcome everybody that would normally come, which means that they'll continue to have online services. And so once we get past 70% and we're looking at 80 and 85 in the longer term, we're concerned about what's going to happen to unvaccinated people. And as you said, it's our nature as churches to have our doors open to welcome all people. And we have a commitment to that, and so we're talking to the government about how that's going to work out.
But the answer to those unvaccinated parishioners is get vaccinated if you want to go to church, and if you don't, just keep watching online.
Yeah, right. Solution.
That's true. We are encouraging people to get vaccinated, and we will continue to minister in that online way if we can. I think when it comes to faith communities, obviously, for those for whom faith is important, it tends to be very important. And so we do think there's a case to say it's a bit more like shopping and going to the doctor than going to the footy or going to the movies. It's something which is really essential to people and at this time, especially to their well-being and their ability to engage in the community.
But if it's so important to you as a parishioner, you get vaccinated.
Yeah, because that's the
answer.
That's the answer to everything.
I can't see the issue here of why you need an exemption.
Look, it's not so much that we're looking for an exemption. We are saying, look, this is an essential service. It appears from overseas that 10 to 15% at least of people remain unvaccinated. And if that were to be the case, then that group of people in the community, they can't be excluded forever. And we certainly want people to be able to...
Oh, this guy wants them to be excluded forever.
We certainly want to have church safe. We've kept church safe over the last couple of years. We want it to be safe. We do want people to be vaccinated, but we want to make sure that no one gets left behind.
Okay. All right, Archbishop, thanks for your time.
See, the bottom line here is that you cannot appease these people. You don't sit there and say, well, please understand that this is important to us. They don't care what's important to you. They don't care. They don't care if you'd like to travel. They don't care if you'd like to have a job, if you'd like to get an education, if you'd like to worship God. They don't care. So you just have to say, I'm sorry, this is none of your business, butt out. And you need to say that as Christians to them. Sorry, you have no authority here. I'm not listening to what you're saying. This is far more important than the kickback that you're getting from the pharmaceutical companies to push this stuff. Call these people out. Get in their face. You can do that type of stuff. I'm just saying, you know, watch out for the big mass rallies at the government buildings. Okay? That's like playing with matches around a gasoline tank. Don't do that either. When you listen to that, it's a good example of how these people will never be satisfied. Again, for the last year and a half, the guy said, well, you know, we've been doing these things. We've kept people safe. No. Now we're going to have new rules and new escalation here. So getting back to LifeSite News, they said it does appear that religious and medical exemptions will be accepted by the government under some circumstances. Now, not for the military. Military personnel, as they point out, and they quote a group called Children of God for Life, they say military personnel in active duty may or may not be allowed an exemption depending on permission granted by the commanding officer. Read the story of one U.S. Coast Guard officer who fought and who did win. But again, it's kind of up to that. But there's a lot of pressure all up and down the command chain. And they said military dependents are allowed religious exemptions. See, they're going to even be trying to inject all the dependents, the wives, the kids, and everybody. Military dependent children vaccine waiver form, and they have a link to that. And so the military matters, of course, are further complicated because active duty military personnel essentially give up basic rights on joining the armed forces. The military even has its own legal system. So for all of those reasons, people in the military are in a very difficult situation with this, especially with Biden in place. They do have a lot of resources here, and they talk about this by category. The next thing they do is they go to priests, because this is a Catholic site, LifeSite is, and they talk about the fact that in a diocese, they're going to have more than 100 employees. But then they also talk about Catholic universities. And this, as I said yesterday, is a big precedent that is being set. Every private university, every private Christian university, the exemptions are not going to be allowed. And where did that come from? That came from the precedents that they set back in 2019 as they finally were able to achieve, and as Trump said, yeah, they got to get the shots. I support that as well. They finally threw away the medical and religious exemptions for MMR vaccines and others. And so that's how we got to this position. And I'm telling you that if you don't fight it now, the next thing that is coming are, of course, more vaccines, but also to take away your religious beliefs, to trample on them in the name of the greater public good, in the name of LGBT employees. So they'll tell you that you've got to fire the Christians now who don't take the genetic code injection. But next week they'll be telling you that you've got to hire the LGBT people in your Christian organization or your university or your private K-12 school. 14 Republican governors have said that they will push back against Biden's vaccine edict. Meanwhile, Montana law actually prohibits proof of coronavirus vaccination as a condition of employment. How will that work for companies like Amazon or Walmart? Ask LifeSite News. Well, here's a tweet from Eric Sammons. He said, here's some advice that I heard from a lawyer. When writing your religious exemption letter to your employer, keep it short and simple. Just state the basic theological or religious reasons for your belief and leave it at that. It should be no more than 2 to 3 paragraphs. And he said, and here's my non-legal advice. If your employer mandates the vaccine, do not help them in the process. Wait until the final deadline to tell them that you won't take the vaccine. Do not submit to weekly tests. Do not quit. Make them fire you. Clog the system to make the mandate more difficult to enforce. Another individual, Beverly Halberg, says the most disturbing part of Biden's speech is that it was a direct attack against pregnant women, people with health conditions, and minorities, the groups that make up the most of the unvaccinated. His words open the door to blame us, to shame us, to terminate us, to potentially physically harm us. That's why I said we've gone from deplorable under Hillary to non-essential under Trump to untouchable and unemployable under Biden. The untouchable caste, the lowest members of the caste system in India. That's the unvaccinated. Catholics opposed to taking the coronavirus vaccine needn't necessarily submit a Catholic-specific letter, says LifeSite News, but you can use a more general Christian letter that does not contradict Catholic teaching. And they're saying this, why? Because the Pope, the Vatican, many of these bishops have already betrayed their principles and their sheep. In the same way that you see a lot of Protestants doing the same thing, as I pointed out. Al Mohr, Franklin Graham, other pastors with big churches that have that, have done the same thing. And what is really happening, and this is what really bothers me, as I said, you know, I talked about how the Southern Baptist Missions Board said, oh, by the way, if you want to engage in foreign missions, we're not going to support you unless you and all of your family members get vaccinated, all the way down to any children who are over the age of 16. If you don't do that, we're not going to let you go anywhere. And they quote the WHO, they quote the CDC. They are afraid to spread the gospel, because if you spread the gospel, you might be spreading the imaginary pandemic. And it's even worse than what they did to the missionaries, because what they did by doing that, and what Al Mohr does, and what Franklin Graham does when they cheer the vaccine, and when the missions board mandates the vaccine, or when the Pope or the bishops do it, or whatever, any organization, what they're doing is they are stabbing the other people in the back as well, in terms of undermining your ability to get a religious exemption. That's why these religious leaders are cooperating with the beast. It's to undermine your moral objections to this. They want to undermine that. And that's the really the key thing. So just make sure that you make it clear in your short paragraph there, if that's necessary. You don't necessarily get it neat. Again, keep it as short as possible, just a couple of paragraphs. But you need to make it clear that these are your religious beliefs. You don't follow the Pope. You don't follow Al Mohr. You don't follow Franklin Graham. You follow Christ. And this is what I believe Christ is saying to me in my reading of the Bible. It's just that simple. Don't follow these people. You're not a follower of these religious leaders, so-called, quote-unquote. You know, the religious leaders have always opposed Christ, haven't they? Liberty Counsel also provides a sample pastor verification letter. And again, I can't stress enough what a great resource this is. It's not just for Catholics. It is a Catholic site, and they focus some on Catholics, but they cover everything. They have personal exemptions, employment samples. They have it for Catholics. They have it for Russian Orthodox. They have it for students. They have it for Orthodox Old Testament and New Testament versions. They have it for Jewish people. And so they have also clergy. They have a pastoral sample. They have a Protestant sample. They have a Catholic sample. You get the idea? They're trying to help everybody here. Good for them. Liberty Counsel, and they have references to these different organizations that will help you. Liberty Counsel also provides a sample pastor verification letter. Such a letter is beneficial to providing the sincerity, proving the sincerity of the belief, but it is not legally required. It is nevertheless very helpful in substantiating a claim that one's belief is religious in nature and that it is sincerely held. That's the key thing. Sincerely held religious beliefs. Your sincerely held religious beliefs are not subject to being judged by any religious leaders or any politicians or any employers or any courts. They are your sincerely held religious beliefs. America's Frontline Doctors has a list of statements from different faith leaders, Catholic, Jewish, evangelical, non-denominational Christian, about the coronavirus vaccines that can be used to support religious exemptions and to help formulate your personal exemption. So they have a reference there from people from a lot of different perspectives. And I've talked in the past. As a matter of fact, we had a listener who mentioned the fact that he was more than willing to write it for people. And I don't have his name here, but in previous examples. By the way, I'll just say this, you know, say it to that pastor who, and I mentioned his name and mentioned the fact that he had somebody come by because he heard about that church. You know, they wrote me a letter talking about what they were doing in terms, a couple of different pastors did, how they were supporting themselves in their ministry, like Paul did, and how they were not closing, did not close, weren't going to close. And so he had somebody come by and say, hey, can you help me with a religious exemption? He was happy to do that. He said, I'll do that for anybody. So any of you pastors who want to write me a letter, I'll be happy to give the name of your church anywhere. And that's not just America. I don't know what the situation is in other countries, but we have listeners in other countries as well. Anybody wants to tell me about that, I'll pass that information on to people. Because let me say, you have to, this is very, very important, and this is bigger than your job. It's bigger than the approval and the little pat on the head that you may or may not get from the government or your employer. You need to identify right now, just from a practical standpoint for your life here on earth, you need to start finding people who are like-minded, who have integrity, who are going to stand with you. And you also need to have, in your journey in this life, Zoom church isn't going to do it for you. It isn't. It's about having that one-on-one interaction. That's a very, very important thing. Why? Because you're going to find in every church, you're going to find people that are very, very different from you. It removes it from the abstract level. You know, you can have a very sanitized relationship with a pastor on a watching them on YouTube. And if you don't like something he says, you can go find somebody else that tells you exactly what you want to hear. But in real life, you got to go with the flow. You're not going to find somebody that agrees with you on everything in real life. And as C.S. Lewis said in his Screwtape Letters, he said, when you go to church, the thing that's going to be distracting you is the person over there with the squeaky boots walking down the pew or whatever, or this annoying kid in the other pew or other things like that, or they're going to do things to annoy you, and you're going to do things to annoy them. And that's one of the reasons why God puts us together in churches, isn't it? So that's a big part of you becoming mature spiritually, emotionally, psychologically mature, that you can work with people who have different opinions than you do. And you're not going to get that looking at it on Zoom church. Yeah, you may occasionally have the Jeffrey Toobin, but hopefully not in a church environment. But you're not going to have stuff typically in a Zoom environment where it's going to be a challenge to you. They have these resources. I'll just run through some of these just to give you an idea so you go there and get these yourself, the links to them. In Richmond, Virginia, there's the Founding Freedoms Law Center. They have samples of religious exemptions and things like that. Children of God for Life, sample Catholic religious exemptions. Advocates for Faith and Freedom, they have a form through which people can request religious exemption. Robert Barnes has a sample religious exemption letter. All those things are free. And then they even have, if you want to go a little bit further, you want to invest in this, they have the healthyamerican.org. Anywhere from $59 to $175, they'll help you to craft a religious exemption consulting and the option to mail the forms and so forth. For about $1,400, they say the cost varies based on situation. They have lawyers at a high-powered law firm, Siri and Glimstad, provide individualized assistance with preparing, filing, obtaining a medical or religious exemption, and all this. So you got all these different things. A lot of free resources. I'd also mention Catherine Austin Fitz. I haven't gone back and looked at those for a while to see if she's updated that with any of this stuff. But again, I think she probably has. Those were excellent forms. I talked to her several months ago. Of course, now things with the imagined authorization by the FDA, things have changed a little bit. But she probably has updated that as well. RNC Chairwoman Rona McDaniel, related to Mitt Romney, says, like many Americans, I'm pro-vaccine, but I'm anti-mandate. Many small businesses and workers do not have the money or the legal resources to fight Biden's unconstitutional actions and authoritarian decrees. But when his decree goes into effect, the RNC will sue the administration to protect Americans and their liberties. They'll do it again. They didn't fight against any of these lockdowns. They didn't fight Fauci when he was the court jester for Trump, or maybe it's the other way around. Trump was his court jester, wasn't he? So they didn't do it there. Daily Wire, and we'll talk about them coming up here in a second. Daily Wire says that we're going to push back against this. America's Frontline Doctors also has a form to help you if you're looking for an attorney, if you're to fight your employer. The new Civil Liberties Alliance is representing people who have natural immunity to coronavirus in their legal battle against Michigan State University. This is another category. If you've had it and you've recovered, like my friend in North Carolina, who contacted me and he said, you know, I gave you the story. Two friends of mine and a father of one of my son's friends back in North Carolina. Very different results based on how far they went with the established medicine. My closest friend did not. He got ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and he had, I'd say, almost a miraculous cure. Like you said, he took it. Things were getting very bad for him, and he just felt this warmth in his chest, and he was up and about instantly. But we've also talked about that with that 80-plus-year-old lady in New York where her relatives got a court order to give it to her. She has already been put on a ventilator, and they got her off the next day. And then the hospital tried to block it. But my friend contacted me and said, just make clear that God heals. We treat diseases, and we should have wisdom in the way that we treat diseases. You know, if you, like George Washington, you're riding your horse on a cold, rainy day around the farm, and you come back and you've got a sore throat, don't call the doctors in that are going to take out a quarter of your blood. Not a quart, but a quarter of it. You might die. And so there needs to be some wisdom about this. But ultimately, it is God who heals. And he said, I give God the glory as to what he did. So, the reason I mentioned that again was because he got his COVID diploma. He got a PCR test. And so I was like, look, I'm alive, and I've had COVID, so I have natural immunity. Go away. Well, that still is a lawsuit, a legal battle with Michigan State University. The new Civil Liberties Alliance is representing people who have natural immunity in that. Roger Severino, former director of the Office of Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, has noted that it is against the Americans with Disabilities Act to force unvaccinated employees to be tested for the coronavirus. Forcing employees to submit to medical tests is technically against the Americans with Disabilities Act. But they point out they're not aware of any lawsuits that address this yet. The vaccinate or test schemes that the federal government has mandated for private employers with over 100 workers appears to violate the ADA as well. And this could also be challenged in court. Severino wrote, some argue that even if irrational or retaliatory forced COVID testing does not impose a big enough indignity to sue over. But he said, let's not be naive. The DOJ memo and the announcement from Biden on Thursday are merely dress rehearsals for the ultimate goal of imposing a national vaccine mandate on everyone or prison. And so how does this work out? We've got Allison Williams, a reporter for ESPN College Football. She's been doing this for, I think it's 15 years. And Disney has a requirement that all employees be vaccinated by September 30th. You know, it's an emergency. So because this is a health emergency, you know, in a month or two, you're going to have to get vaccinated or you're going to be fired. In a month or two. Total nonsense. But she said this. And again, I want to mention this as encouragement. And let me just say once again, LifeSiteNews.com was where you find all that stuff that I just talked about. All the discussions about the state of where it's happening in America and in Canada in terms of people pushing back who already have natural immunity, people pushing back against the testing requirement if you don't get vaccinated, all these different types of assistance and putting together a religious exemption and so forth. So, again, go there. That's a great resource. I can't stress that enough. This is from a personal standpoint. I liked what she had to say because she has her priorities straight. Allison Williams, who I don't know, I don't watch football, I don't watch college football, I don't watch Disney. While my work, she says, is incredibly important to me, the most important role I have is as mother. She said, I have decided not to receive the vaccine at this time while my husband and I try for a second child. She said, taking the vaccine at this time is not in my best interest. After a lot of prayer and deliberation, I've decided that I must put my family and my personal health first. I know that I'll be put on the sidelines, and she has. She'll be fired in a week or so, if they haven't done it by then. And I just want to reiterate that and emphasize the fact that she says her family and her personal health come first. Because they do. Don't put your job before your personal health. Don't put your job before your family. If you're looking at this and thinking, what am I going to do for my family? I would ask you, what can you do for your family if you lose your health? If you lose your life? If you play this Russian roulette and you lose? And understand, this isn't one pull of the trigger to your head. It's going to be a second and a third and a fourth. And then there'll be other things that they will demand for you. And if you want to stand for your children, then you take a stand now to say, we're not going to allow this precedent that removes all individual liberty and informed consent. I don't want my children to live under that. I don't want to live under that. That is, by the way, how you love your neighbor right now, is to stand against your neighbor being turned into a slave, even if your neighbor doesn't realize they're being turned into a slave. Even if your neighbor is cheering them along, accepting the chains, and cheering them along to put the chains on you, you resist this. You push back against this. You defend their freedom until they wise up, or even if they don't wise up, ever. And yes, you should be concerned about your family, and that means that you should be concerned about your health. You know, whenever you fly on an airplane, what do they tell you? And of course, this is going to be a dated analogy pretty soon, since we won't be able to fly on airplanes anymore. But they always tell you if there's an emergency, these things will drop down. And that's the point at which you know it's over. But, you know, you have the oxygen mask that will drop down. Theoretically, maybe you're going to survive. Who knows? It could just be a loss of pressure. Maybe you're not going to crash. But when those things drop down, they said, the first thing that you do if you have family members there, right? The instinct is everybody's going to want to take that mask and they want to put it on the little kid that's there with them. But you take care of yourself first. You put that mask on you first, because if you don't get the mask on you, you won't be able to put it on the kid. The kid might temporarily pass out if you're fumbling with this thing or something, but then you can put it on and then they'll be okay. But if you're fumbling with this thing and you don't have the mask on and you can't breathe and you're having a problem getting it on the kid, you could pass out and then neither one of you would have a mask. You see how that works? You take care. If you want to take care of your family, you take care of yourself first. If you want to provide for your family, the first thing you have to do is provide for your own health. And don't play Russian roulette for money. For money. I mean, this is worse than the deer hunter. In the deer hunter, they're doing it because they're going to shoot them in the head if they don't play Russian roulette. This is a game where they're offering you money. You know, they offered you an opportunity to win $1 million or to get a donut every day for a year, you know, or to get some other junk food. And sometimes they offered kids, you know, here's $50 off of your tuition or something, you know, all these little trinkets that they were offering people. And they've just stepped up the ante. They said, here you go. Play Russian roulette, and that job that you have, you get to keep. And that's a bigger deal, and it's a more certain deal. It's either in or out. So it's bigger than spinning the wheel and saying, well, okay, I didn't win $1 million, but I didn't lose anything. No, this is all the skin is in the game right now. If you play Russian roulette, you may lose that game. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, and as we look at this, we've got some climate update stories that are coming up. And we have an amazing Jurassic Park story, as you hear the music in the background. I believe the lunacy behind this one. It's all about mammoths, and this is a mammoth harebrained scheme. It's been concocted by some people to save the planet. There's the two guys behind the scheme right there. This new company says that it is bringing back the woolly mammoth as a way to fight climate change. And I saw this and I thought, what in the world are they talking about? I know it was a big narrative not too long ago where they were saying all these species are all disappearing and it's all because of climate change. And we got to do something about this. And so, well, maybe that's what they're trying to do. Except if you remember, the woolly mammoths disappeared not because of man-made climate change. Yeah, climate change is a thing, and it happens, right? And that's why they are no longer with us. So they're the victim not of man-made climate change. You know, it wasn't you and your automobile or your barbecue grill or the fact that you ate meat that took out the woolly mammoths. It was the Ice Age, the ending and changing. It was global warming. And so now they think... Now, try to follow this twisted logic that they've got. They think that they can bring back the woolly mammoth to stop global warming. The woolly mammoths were not able to stop global warming the first time around. I don't know how many woolly mammoths there were, but they weren't able to stop global warming. This is just elementary, critical thinking. But, you know, everybody's got an article about this. Entrepreneur Magazine has got it. All these mainstream media organizations have got it. Science magazines have got it because it captures everybody's imagination with the Jurassic Park aspect of it. And it's put up on Drudge Report and all these other things. But the key thing is that they missed the message of Michael Crichton in Jurassic Park. He was counseling. The whole point of that story was to counsel people against messing around with genetic engineering. And he said in the foreword of it, he said, there's a lot of, and this is 30 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, 35 years ago. He said, there's a lot of work that's being done on genetics right now. Of course, this is before CRISPR and other things like that. And he said, the problem I have with it is nobody's looking at anything other than, can we do this? Can we do it? How much is it going to cost? That's why he has the character in the story, played in the movie by Jeff Goldblum, saying, well, maybe just because you can do it doesn't mean that you should do it. And he was pushing back against the fact that the technology for genetic manipulation was running so quickly and nobody was looking at the implications of it. And so this is the article. They say they believe that the woolly mammoth can help bring back and to help cool our warming planet. Again, seriously, these people, it's like, why did they disappear in the first place? Because they couldn't withstand the global warming. But now it's going to be all different, right? Even though they keep telling us it's man-made global warming and we're here and we are overriding, our little contributions are overriding everything that is happening naturally. Our contributions are overriding the effects of the sun, you know, the solar cycles that increase and decrease in intensity that create these long-term climate cycles. No, no, no. None of that is as important as what man does. And so if man is overriding, these people are saying, oh, no, we will bring back the woolly mammoths who were not able to overcome natural circumstances, let alone what people are doing. But here's the idiotic logic behind these environmentalists. The company is called Colossal. They say it is a bioscience and genetics engineering company that launches today, yesterday. And it's backed by Harvard University and some of the world's most forward-thinking scientists. Now, if that doesn't scare you to death, the people that are this harebrained stupid are going to start messing with DNA. That really should get your attention. Because they've got PhDs from Harvard, because they've got lots of money from Silicon Valley or whoever, doesn't mean that they know anything about what they're doing. They're stupid enough to think that the mammoths that went extinct by natural global warming are going to stop natural and man-made global warming now. Fighting climate change with mammoths may seem crazy. Yes, it does. But it has decades of research behind it. See? It's being done by your ivory towers. This is an argument holding forth, yet again, experts, self-professed experts and academics who know nothing about what they're doing and whose folly is as obvious as the fact that the emperor has no clothes. George Church, PhD, a well-known pioneer in genomics. He runs a lab at Harvard. He's been exploring how to genetically re-engineer the woolly mammoth. You know, I'm fine with him bringing back a woolly mammoth. You know, it'd be fun to see him or whatever. But if you think that they're going to stop climate change, this is a big, big problem. The greatest threats, here's his argument for environmentalism. He said, one of the greatest threats to the Earth is the melting of the Arctic permafrost, except that it's growing quite a bit this year. They've had a bumper growth in the permafrost. They don't want to report that. And he said, and that's causing a massive release of greenhouse gases that are stored safely and it's freeze. When the herds of woolly mammoth and other animals vanished, that area became covered with forest that keeps the earth warmer. Church is betting on the idea that resurrected population of the mammoths, if let loose in the Arctic, would chomp and stomp down the bushes and trees, exposing the earth to sub-zero temperatures and allowing the tundra's original grasslands to grow back. Think about how boneheaded stupid this is. These are the people telling us that we can't eat meat. Why? Well, you know, because when you have cows and you've got pigs and stuff, like, they're going to be releasing methane gas. And methane gas, they say, is causing global warming. So what are you going to do? You're going to create a massive, and it'd have to be pretty massive, wouldn't it? To roam around the Arctic and to chomp and stomp everything down. So you're going to create a massive herd of woolly mammoths, but don't worry. Their methane gases will be completely different, I'm sure, than the massive herds of cows and pigs, and it will turn things in the other direction. And then the other part of it is that they are always worried about carbon dioxide. How do you get rid of carbon dioxide? Well, when God designed the closed system that we have, you know, we have animals who breathe in oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide, and then we have plants that take in the carbon dioxide and release oxygen. It's a symbiotic relationship. And yet these people are saying that not only do we not have to worry about the CO2 methane gas coming from the massive herds of woolly mammoths, but the forests are a bad thing. The forests are a bad thing. the forests that are going to take out the CO2. They want to try to tie CO2. It's a core premise of their religion. And it is a religion because it's not science. The core premise is that a rise in CO2 causes a proportional rise in temperature. That has not happened. That can be demonstrated to have not happened. That was the fundamental premise of Al Gore's movie, the fundamental premise of Michael Mann's Hockey Stick. And so none of this makes sense. From the methane to the woolly mammoths to the getting to eradicating the forests that they say are growing there, to the idea that the mammoths are going to protect us from global warming and help us to get back in the ice age. This is childish, childish. And this is being sold to us by somebody from Harvard University. Stop being a PhD, by the way. Stop being impressed by these people's credentials. They're blithering idiots. We found a way to harness CRISPR's power for species de-extinction. Now he gets back to the other side of this. So if we can do this with a mammoth, then we can do it for everything. You know, we can bring back the T-Rexes and so forth. It wasn't until a big-thinking Texan serial entrepreneur named Ben Lamb came along that anyone created a company to put this into practice. This guy is working on all kinds of greenwash schemes. And so this is just another one of these things. So, again, he says he formed Colossal with three others because he was so compelled by the radical approach to fighting climate change. Everything this guy has done is to get subsidies from government. And just like Bill Gates and his vaccines, just like Bill Gates and his lab meat or his synthetic meat or whatever, they want to ban all of their competitors by the government because, you know, hey, if you don't get the vaccine, you're going to die. If you eat meat, the whole planet's going to die too. If you don't buy my product, we're all going to die. So they get the government to come in and shut down their competitors, subsidize them. They come in on the ground floor with a new tactic, and then they rise, you know, to become even more wealthy with that. And then they sell it off. Then they probably go in and get that banned and come up with a new scheme. You know, when you look at the way the stock market is manipulated, how do people make money on the stock market? They don't make money if the stock market is stable. These guys who are making money in the stock market make it because the stocks go up or they go down. They don't make any money when it's going sideways. And they make big money if they cause it to go up and to go down, and if they invest in it. And we just had an example of that with Litecoin. You had somebody put out a tweet. They kind of faked some credentials that looked like this guy was an official for Walmart and put out, he kind of copied the name of the guy who is a Walmart official who would have made a financial decision like this and saying, Walmart is going to start using Litecoin. All of a sudden, whoosh, it goes straight up. And then Walmart comes out and said, that's not us. We're not going to do that. And it goes straight down. Well, somebody made a lot of money, right? They probably bought a bunch of Litecoin, put out that phony story, and then sold it after it spiked. And so you want to know who did it. You find out who did that type of thing. Just kind of like 9/11, by the way. But this is the game that Bill Gates and all these people play. Ban my competitors. I've got something completely new, and you need to go with me because if you don't go with me, we're all going to die from the way that we're doing things now, whether it's air conditioning or it's with the meat or whether it is cars or whatever. We're all going to die. You got to buy my vaccine, and you've got to ban anything that's a competition to it. Don't allow people to have ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or natural meat. No, no, no. My product only. Energy prices in Europe are hitting a record after the wind stops blowing. I mean, I just look at this and say, how? You know, I was with a group that was fighting this about 10 or 15 years ago, trying to get the papers from Michael Mann, who was conspiring with people in East Anglia in the UK, part of ClimateGate, where they were trying to hide the decline and manipulate the numbers and so forth. And then I was involved with them in trying to stop renewable energy mandates that were beginning at first in Colorado, one of the first places to put it on. So we had a lawsuit in Colorado to fight these renewable energy mandates. And we talked about the fact that these windmills and other things, they're cyclical. I don't mean by that the blades go around. I mean that even when they would put them in a windy area, like the North Sea off of Ireland, it would go up and down. It would cycle up and down. And so they would take the traditional forms of energy, things like natural gas, things like coal, and they would have to supply the differences to make sure that you got a steady power output on the grid, which meant that you're running those power plants up and down and up and down. And just like your car in stop-and-go traffic doesn't get as good a fuel economy, it would make those reliable older forms of energy generation, it would make them dirtier. They would be less efficient. They would generate more emissions, which you're saying is the whole point. But, of course, we know the whole point is to get everybody to buy whatever these greenwashed millionaires are selling at any given moment. And so here we are, you know, when they did it in, at the time they were doing it in the North Sea, and we said, well, look at what they did. They had problems with it being going up and down. So they decided that the solution would be, let's do a vast wind farm way out, you know, all over the water. All that did was give them bigger troughs and valleys. It's really something. So now the wind has stopped blowing. A slowdown in wind-driven electricity production off the coast of the UK. Who knew? Who knew? Has been whipsawing through regional energy markets. The wind in the stormy North Sea stopped blowing. Yeah. Didn't see that coming, did we? Yeah, actually we did. New CO2 monitoring credit card. This is coming from ClimateDepot.com. A new CO2 monitoring credit card will enable the tracking of carbon footprint on every single purchase that you do. Do you think they're going to put this on, make Bill Gates carry one of these things around? So every time he flies somewhere with his personal jet or, you know, a Greta or AOC, that they have to check in with this? No, they're not going to do that. No, it's going to be for you and me. It'll monitor, and it will cut off our spending whenever we hit our carbon max. And this is a partnership now between MasterCard and the United Nations and the World Economic Forum, Davos. The World Economic Forum, Davos, praised this. They said, quote, while many of us are aware that we need to reduce our carbon footprint, advice on doing so can seem nebulous, and keeping a tab on it is difficult. So this device monitors and cuts off spending when we reach our carbon max. Isn't that nice? See, it's exactly the type of thing that they want to do. It's one of the reasons why they want to go to digital cash. With digital cash, as I said before, they can put a time limit on it, which is, you know, they're already talking about doing that with a Chinese digital yuan. Put a time limit on it so you can't save money. So you can't build wealth. So you can't go into competition with them. And then they can also limit where you spend your money and what types of things you buy. And this will be the justification for limiting what types of things you buy and even how much you're allowed to consume, because we have to save the climate for the woolly mammoths. The appropriate response to these people is just to laugh at them. Unfortunately, it doesn't make them go away. A little bit more headline news before we get back into some of the mandates and the pushbacks against the mandates. We have the Taliban is bringing back what they call their virtue ministry. Their virtue. You know, here we have the Antifa Marxists, the people that have been trained by our government schools and our government-subsidized universities. You know, the people that system wants to produce. It is a factory system. That in and of itself is enough reason for you to reject it for yourself and for your children. There is no such thing as a one-size-fits-all education. They're not interested in your kids knowing anything. They don't want you to know math. They want your kids masked. No math, but masks. and they don't want your kids reading, and they certainly don't want them to think critically. You know, you can go all the way through and become a Harvard PhD, and you can't figure out that having an army of woolly mammoths is not going to stop global warming. That just, I still can't get over the absurdity of that situation. That is like something out of the Babylon Bee. You can't come up with a more absurd satire than to say, we need to stop global warming. I know, we'll bring back the woolly mammoths because it was cold when the woolly mammoths were around. And then why did the woolly mammoths disappear? Well, because they couldn't withstand the climate. But, you know, this is the way these people are. So you have the Taliban bringing back what they call a virtue ministry. And I want to tell you that the true children, they keep calling us Taliban. They call the Trump supporters. They call those who oppose the vaccines. They call us a Taliban. And they're far more concerned about us than they are about the Taliban, even. And yet, it's the Taliban who is doing virtue signaling. How do they do virtue signaling with the Taliban? Their virtue ministry is the organization that stones people and does amputations for major sins. The ministry of vice and virtue. It's kind of like, you know, the ministry of peace, the ministry of love that you have in the Orwellian books. You know, 1984, the ministry of love. Yeah, these people are all about virtue. So we're going to, you know, cut your head off, amputate your hand, stone you, whatever. And I love what the Babylon Bee did. They have rednecks dressing up as Taliban so that Biden will give them billions of dollars in firearms. Got a picture of a kind of chubby guy wearing a turban, and he's in bib overalls, and he's got a banjo that he's holding. There he is, right there. he's got the turban on, so he can pass as Taliban. And they have in their satire piece here, Biden saying to his aides, Republicans are just like the Taliban. Then I would like to immediately and unconditionally withdraw from all their territories and surrender. Tell them that we'll give them whatever they want. Abandon all federal personnel. We need to get out of there immediately and leave behind all the equipment and facilities. Whatever the expression is. Leave no stone unturned. I don't know. Whatever makes sense here. Whatever, you know, get rid of the malarkey and let's just get out of here. Yeah. Except that when you look at what actually happened in Afghanistan, there's an article from WND, The Day the Music Died. It's not about American pie. This is about, I guess we could call this Taliban pie. Taliban says bye-bye to music because all music is evil. You know, they don't discriminate. All music is evil. There isn't a particular genre that they don't like. They hate all genres, orchestra music and everything else. I talked yesterday briefly about the pictures of the smashed grand piano. And I think that is very indicative of where we are with these people, whether they are Antifa Marxist or whether they are Taliban Muslims, these people who can destroy something that they would never be able to produce themselves. You know, whether it's a beautiful statue or whether it is a society, or even if it's something like a piano. There's no way these guys could ever build a piano. Reminds me of the Hank the Cow Dog stories that we used to read our kids. The two hands are out there one day, and they're doing a fence. And he says, are the two pieces of wood, are they touching? You know, he yells to the other guy, and he goes, no. He goes, does it again. He goes, are they touching now? And he goes, yeah, they're touching. They're not quite there. He goes, well, nail them. We ain't building pianos here. Well, they ain't building pianos in Afghanistan either. They're smashing them to bits. Because, you know, some people create and others destroy. The Marxists and the Muslims that we face here. Today, the music died in Afghanistan, and with this huge part of culture died too. The once-renowned all-female Zohra Orchestra was broken into, and the Taliban attacked the instruments, as they tweeted that out with the pictures of it. And then WND points out the beef that these Muslims have, the Taliban have with this. They've got a couple of quotes from the Quran. This one here, Allah sent me as a guidance and a mercy to believers and commanded me to do away with musical instruments, flutes, strings, crucifixes. I didn't know anybody that played with a crucifix. They are there to purge Christianity, but also the flutes and the strings and all the things that Jewish people, Christian people have used to praise God through the Psalms, through everything else. They also said, on the day of resurrection, Allah will pour molten lead into the ears of whoever sits listening to a songstress. See, we serve a very different God. You know, all this stuff that, well, you know, Allah is just another name for God. No, it's a very different God. Our God is a God who sings over his people with joy. Zephaniah 3:17. He will quiet you with his love and rejoice over you with singing. There is no rejoicing, however, when Democrats are in the White House with taxes. Democrats propose a $3 trillion tax hike on working families and small businesses. Tax increases everywhere. Tax increases on everything. And, of course, you know, spending $80 billion to get 80,000 IRS agents, $1 million each. So, you know, either they're going to pay these guys really well or they're going to give them lots of equipment to audit everything that we do. As ATR.org points out, raising taxes on working families by increasing the federal corporate income tax rate from 21% to 26.5%. This tax increase will be passed along to working families in the form of higher prices. Yes, of course. You can't tax a corporation. Whenever you tax a company, they know what their cost of doing business is. So if you add taxes to the corporation, they will either, if they're stupid enough that they don't know that they're being taxed, they have to know. But, you know, if they didn't know, they would go out of business. If they're able to pass it on to you in the form of higher prices or lower wages, they will do that in order to stay in business. So you don't ultimately tax corporations. They do that because just like the coercion that they've run through corporations to shut down our free speech, just like the corporate coercion that they're using to mandate vaccines, they run these types of things through the corporations so you don't see it. I mean, even your Social Security contribution. You know that if you're self-employed, you pay 15.5% or 15.2% or whatever. It's 7.6% that you see taken out of your check, but your employer puts in another 7.6, puts in a matching amount. They don't want you to see the full, they don't want you to see that you're paying 15.25% off the top just for Social Security before you even get to income taxes. So what they do is they tell the corporation, you send in half, we'll call it a matching contribution, and then you can deduct the other half from their employee. But the corporation knows that the cost to you, your cost to them is whatever they're paying you in terms of your gross salary plus another 7.6%. So it's going to raise the corporate tax rate from 21% to 26.5%. This will give the U.S. a combined state and federal tax rate of 30.9% for corporations on average. The developed world on average has 23.5%. So we will have a 30%, 31%. So the world average is 23.5%. With Biden, we will go up to 31%. By comparison, China has a 25% corporate tax rate. And Europe has an average of 21.7%. So Democrats want to take us to 31, even though China is doing 25, and the average is 23.5. But it gets even worse if you're in New York or California. Top-earning New Yorkers could face a 61.2% combined tax rate under the House plan, and Californians may face a 59% rate. I guess you could put that in the category of be careful what you want. Because you just might get Democrats in New York and California. They might just tax you to death. And the good thing about it is all these rich people in New York and California that keep giving money to the Democrats as they are doing to Newsom in this recall election. Newsom was doing poorly in the election. It looked like Larry Elder was going to do well. And again, I'm not going to try to put a nail in his coffin. There's a lot of shenanigans that are happening in this election. But one of the key things that I imagine did turn the tide somewhat remains to be seen. I'm not going to say that he's lost. But all these different people are saying that he lost. Again, some of that is predictive programming. You know, they have to get the public to expect that somebody's going to lose, even if they didn't lose, and they're going to stash, stuff the ballots. And we've got a lot of polling centers telling Republicans, hey, you've already voted. Now, that happens. I pointed out how in the 2012 elections, that happened to a friend of my brother-in-law's in North Carolina, because in North Carolina, you only have to show up with a name and an address. And so his friend shows up, gives him the name and the address, and they look down and say, oh, you've already voted. And so there's this other person at your house. That's my mother. She's been dead for several years. So that type of thing is probably happening, no doubt, in California. But the other thing that has happened is that they made this an election not about Newsom's incompetence and not about his lockdown orders. And I don't know. I haven't been following the campaign closely. But Larry Elder, he made it pretty clear, I'm not going to do lockdowns, I'm not going to do mask mandates, I'm not going to do vaccine mandates if I become governor. To me, that should have been the end of the election right there. He should have won hands down. If the people want freedom, the problem is people in California don't really want freedom, number one. Number two, they got Soros and a lot of Hollywood billionaires to throw millions, tens of millions of dollars to Newsom. They've conducted a big campaign to talk about just the fact that he's a Republican, and that you don't want to have a Republican as governor there, because everybody knows that Dianne Feinstein is circling the drain if she hasn't already been flushed down the thing. They can only keep up pretenses for so long. I guess they could keep up the pretense that she's actually mentally there indefinitely, but, you know, in the state of health that she's in, she could die. And then that becomes a bit more difficult. It's like a weekend with Bernie, the rest of the term with Dianne Feinstein, you know, propping her up and taking her from here to there. But if she dies in office or is incapable of doing it, then the governor would make her appoint her replacement until the next election. And if that were to be a Republican, then they could appoint a Republican, and that would change the balance of power in the Senate, because it's evenly divided now, 50-50. So they basically poured tons of money in there, scaring these Californians who are predominantly Democrat about voting for anybody with an R after their name. And so besides that, though, you're getting a lot of the usual Democrat shenanigans at the polling places. So today they're voting, and we don't have any information about that yet. We'll have that information. I don't know. Will we have it tomorrow? Do they report the results anymore right away, or do they kind of hang on to them and keep playing the game of stuffing ballots for days and days? We may not have an answer tomorrow, or maybe they'll just say it's a runaway and he wins. Meanwhile, you've got a lot of pro-lifers, you've got a lot of churches who are really trying to get the vote out for Larry Elder, as they see as the best chance of defeating Newsom. First of all, there's two questions. They've got to vote to recall him. And that has to be more than 50%. And then if that is the case, then I think he can still win, theoretically, you know, if he has a plurality. You don't have to have a plurality. You don't have to be more than 50%. You just have to be the person that gets the highest number of votes. And it's a lot of people who are running. You know, so somebody could conceivably win with 30% of the vote, for example. So there's two votes, one to get rid of him, and then who is going to be the next governor, part two. And I think he gets to participate in that. I haven't really looked at that carefully, but we'll know tomorrow what they're going to do, I guess. Maybe they will extend this out. A lot of people are being told that you've already voted. One last bit of news here. Sean Spicer, who was the RNC head as Trump was running, and then Trump put him in for a while as kind of a co-spokesman with Steve Bannon. And then as he left, he was put on the advisory board of the Naval Academy. And apparently President Trump did this with a lot of people. Now, Sean Spicer has got a history with the military. Sean Spicer has been in the U.S. Naval Reserve for 22 years in the Navy. I don't know how much time he's been in the Naval Reserve. but he is now a commander in the U.S. Naval Reserve. He's held several leadership positions spanning five different administrations. He's won various awards and decorations. He graduated from the U.S. Naval War College. He says, I am well qualified to finish the three-year term I was appointed to in 2019. So he'd be there until next year. The Biden administration wanted to politicize that and sent him a letter saying, resign now. We want to put our people in. And so when you look at this, I don't really know how much of an effect it has as an advisory board. I imagine this is one of these gifts that they give to political contributors, you know, just like an ambassadorship to Lithuania or something. But this is what they think is important. This is what they think is important. They don't care about the vaccine mandates. You know, these people who are the inside clique of Trump and the Republican Party, because one of the other people that is kicking up sand about this is Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne Conway was appointed to one of these military boards by President Trump. Now, Kellyanne Conway doesn't have any experience in the military as far as I can tell. I mean, there's been a lot of combat experience within her family between her and her husband, George, and her daughter. But I don't think that qualifies. But she's saying, I'm not going to resign either. This is, again, politics versus politics. I frankly don't care whether Kellyanne Conway is on one of these military academy boards. I don't imagine that whoever Biden wants to put in there is going to be any more qualified to say anything about the military than Kellyanne Conway is. Probably wouldn't be. But this is what these people think is important. This is the little world in Washington in which they live. And these people who are now grasping over this and fighting over this, who did absolutely nothing to defend your small business as it was being destroyed last year, and hundreds of thousands of others on Main Street, they did nothing to roll back the power grab of the CDC as it sought to remove property from middle-class working families. 45% of the rental property, residential rental property, is owned by small investors. And those people have just been crushed by the CDC putting in these regulations, supported by both the Trump administration and the Biden administration, and then enabled by Trump appointees in the Supreme Court until finally they'd had enough. I said, of course, they were going to remove it at some point in time, but they would wait until the balloon notes were so big that most of these individual residential real estate owners, landlords, would lose it to the banks, lose it to BlackRock, the Wall Street people. And that's exactly what is happening now. And so the people in Washington, if you think the elections, the federal elections, are a solution to any of this, listen to the deafening silence from the senators, from the governors, about all of this stuff that has been happening to us. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about the mandates, and we have an update as to 10 more things that the government will be mandating this year from the Babylon Bee. But we're going to talk about the mandated shots, the backlash, the strategic planning of what they want to do to resist this, so stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far.
Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
And we have, actually, APS Radio is setting up an APS Radio News. We'll have that link at thedavidknightshow.com as well when they put that in. Also want to thank Aftermath FM for carrying this show live in the mornings. And they do rebroadcast it sometimes. There is an app that you can get to archives of Clyde Lewis and many other programs that are on aftermath.fm. And then I just want to remind you, just because we never know what's going to happen on social media, if you're watching this, and still I'm surprised that, first of all, that I'm still on Twitter, and I'm also surprised that Periscope is still working, because they said they were going to stop supporting it, but they don't support the app anymore, but we're still, you know, have the account, and we're still streaming stuff there. But primarily, you can find the streaming of the live show video at DLive at Trovo, and then, of course, we have the archives of the full show that we put up on four different sites, BitChute, and Odyssey, and Rumble, as well as YouTube. And on Rumble, we seem to be pretty transparent because the name that we've got there is not transparent, but unfindable, I should say, because we're there as Roundtable Report. But you can find the links to all that, as well as the links to the full audio podcast that goes up every day. And what I do each day for the full shows and for the podcast, we put in topics by time code, because I know that we talk about a lot of different things over a three-hour period. And so I'd like to help you find it by topic in case you don't have time to listen to the entire thing. But we do cut out video clips of different topics and put them up on the video channels as well. And on some of the channels, some of the providers like BitChute, we have a difficult time getting the full show to upload and to render. And it seems to work much better if we split it into two or three parts. That's one of the reasons why you'll see it on some platforms in two or three parts, and on others, you'll see it just in one single part. Let's talk a little bit about mandates. 10 more things the government will be mandating this year, says Babylon Bee. One of them, for the entire month of October, all foods should be pumpkin spice flavor. Well, why not? Because, you know, they can tell us to do anything they wish. They don't care what you want. They can tell you what to eat. As a matter of fact, they're going to tell you what to eat. They're going to tell you that you can't have meat, chicken, pork. You know, as I played for you last week, you know, this Biden official says, well, you know, inflation's not really that bad if you throw out the cost of food, you throw out the cost of homes, the cost of gasoline, the cost of cars. I mean, cars are getting so expensive now. Forget about the new versus used. It's starting to get expensive even for wrecks. Cars have been totaled in floods and things like that. Yeah, but just don't count any of that stuff. Let's only count the stuff that makes us look good. So for the entire month of October, all foods must be pumpkin spice flavor because Biden says so. Biden is a fan of pumpkin spice, and he thinks you should be too. So bring it on. Also, during all the other months of the year, all foods must still be pumpkin spice flavored. But dang it. Everyone approached by Joe Biden must allow him to sniff them without resistance because it is his kingly right. Number 5, everybody must wear socks with sandals. Doing so is an important sign of submission to your rulers. Yeah, not just the mask, you know, it'll be sandals, socks, shorts, that type of thing. Besides, if everybody's doing it, it's not weird, right? Just like the mask. Wednesday is Soylent Green Day. Be sure to eat your weekly nutritious food square. So let's talk about the mandated Trump shots with that in mind. We have 20-plus Republican states are exploring lawsuits against Biden's outrageous vaccine mandates. Let's get a quick overview of the backlash from mainstream media's perspective, and then we'll talk about that.
Tonight, growing backlash over President Biden's vaccine mandate. At least 19 Republican governors denouncing the rule, requiring businesses with at least 100 employees to make COVID shots mandatory or offer weekly testing.
The president's actions in a mandate hardens the resistance.
This is
Florida
Asa Hutchinson.
Ron DeSantis promising a fine.
See how they line up?
Not be cast aside because they make a medical decision for themselves.
President Biden calling opposition cavalier, adding all federal workers and contractors should be vaccinated within 75 days or face fines.
The requirements for vaccination are part of a long tradition that we have in this country of taking steps as a collective to keep people safe.
But fallout underway. No. In New York, the mandate forcing one hospital to turn away expectant mothers after staff members quit.
The number of resignations received leaves us no choice but to pause delivering babies at Lewis County General Hospital.
Think they're still doing abortions?
Business owner Stephen Bullock feels stuck.
It's a fight every day.
The vaccination rate of his 125 employees, about 40%. Now he fears some quitting to work somewhere smaller where the mandate doesn't apply.
Have you found anything that is capable of changing someone's mind at this point?
Frankly,
can we change Biden's mind?
Folks are really dug in, and it seems the harder you try, the further they go.
And yet major corporations in
favor. Because they smell
rat. Like Amazon, Home Depot, and Walmart say they welcome the plan. The hope, drive down U.S. COVID cases as they start to plateau. Infections now down 10% from their peak during the latest wave driven by the Delta variant. Doctors say there are three main reasons why. Increased use of masks indoors, a steady rise in vaccination rates, and the virus burns through until there's no one else to infect.
And Morgan's with us. Morgan.
Okay, so we'll leave it at that. That's enough mainstream media lies to last us for the rest of the program, isn't it? But we won't spend all the time on that. They began with Asa Hutchinson. This is a chance for him to go on mainstream media and try to recover a little bit of his base that he alienated. I played for you the people who were attacking him and calling him a tyrant. And so now he can come out here and defend this, right? See how that works? The Hegelian dialectic. You have thesis, antithesis, and you now have synthesis. So I'm all for the vaccine. I just don't want it mandated, right? And you're going to scare people away. And you hear this guy, a small businessman, say, and the media guy interviewing him say, isn't there anything you can say to your employees to get them to do this stuff? To change their mind? Well, is there anything that we can do to change the mind of Biden or of Fauci or of Murphy, any of these people who are doing this? No. No science, no data, nothing. As a matter of fact, you know, Biden says these governors who are resisting this, they're cavalier. And oh, by the way, this is a health emergency. I mean, we just have to do this right now. Everybody's going to die. So do this sometime within the next 75 days. Next 75 days. Somebody asked the nurses. You know, that's the big glaring thing. They even talk about how many nurses quit at one hospital. So now we can't deliver babies. Well, why don't you ask those nurses what they think? And why are they quitting? These are nurses who have been on the front line. These nurses know better than the big corporations. They know better than the small corporations. They know better than the politicians or the news media as to why they don't want to play Russian roulette. So ask them. You might want to pay attention. That's a very important indicator. As I mentioned during while that was running through there, do you think, now this is one New York hospital where they've had so many nurses that have disappeared, they decided that they're not going to deliver babies anymore. Do you think that if you were in New York, you would have any trouble at all getting an abortion somewhere? You may not be able to get your baby delivered, but, you know, an abortion, that'll be fine. So, you know, either deliver the baby yourself or just go down to Planned Parenthood and they'll take care of it for you down there. 20-plus Republican states looking at lawsuits. The rule has yet to be formalized. It will come through the Department of Labor, through the Office of Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. They're talking about $14,000 fines per violation. Oh, by the way, all those big companies that were essential last year under the Trump administration. Now, you know why they're essential. I told you at the time they were essential because they would push the Great Reset and the small businesses wouldn't. And so these big companies now are doing this, right? As they pull away the extended unemployment benefits, now the big companies say, oh, and we'll fire you if you don't get the vaccine. Just a coincidence. Not a conspiracy. It's just an amazing set of coincidences. Biden announced he will mandate vaccines with no testing option for all federal employees, all federal contractors, all health care workers at facilities that accept Medicare or Medicaid funding. Are there any health care facilities that don't accept Medicaid or Medicare funding? Not really. I mean, back in North Carolina, we had a GP that we went to who did not deal in insurance. It was much cheaper than we would have paid for a deductible. And he didn't want to mess with it. I'm telling you, this is an opportunity for us to do our own great reset, for us to build a society that is better than the one that is being denied access to for us. This is our chance. This is an opportunity. Think of it that way. Because, you know, when you look at America at the time of the Revolution, I don't remember how many. I want to say that it was about 4 million people only. And I mean, that's not even a very big state anymore, 4 million people. But that was the total population of the 13 colonies, I believe. I know somebody will fact check me on this. But it was somewhere in that neighborhood, okay? But it was a teeny, teeny, tiny fraction. Yet somehow they were able to survive. Somehow they were not only able to survive, but they were able to prosper. And they were actually a small minority of that 4 million people were able to hold off the biggest government in the world, the biggest empire at that time. So don't misunderestimate, as George W. Bush would say, what we're capable of doing. You know, we're talking about 20 or 30% of the people, as Biden has been saying. You're talking about 80 to 100 million people. There's a lot of things that we could do if we organize properly. We don't need these other people. We can start building our own parallel society that is many, many times bigger than the entire United States was at its inception. When you have a president like Biden issuing unconstitutional edicts against the American people, we have a responsibility to stand up for the Constitution and to fight back, and we are doing that in the state of Florida, said Ron DeSantis. This is a president who has acknowledged in the past that he does not have the authority to force this on anybody, and this order would result potentially in millions of Americans losing their job. And again, he makes the case, as he talks about that, he said, you know, this is not going to just impact the people who lose their job. This is going to impact everybody in society because you're going to start having shortages. You're going to have babies that can't be delivered. You're going to have operations that can't be performed, medical care that cannot be given. You're going to have the police disappear in many cases, and the firefighters are going to disappear in many cases. You're going to create supply chain problems, and all you need to do is create a supply chain problem at one node of a very long and complicated supply chain in order to create tremendous disruption everywhere. What Biden is doing, let's pull back and look at the bigger picture, because so many times those of us who do not want to have unconstitutional dictatorship and removal of all of our informed consent, we look at that, and that is the key issue here. But there's a bigger issue. If we want to make common cause with other people, even those who are big vaccine supporters, you need to make the case that this is going to disrupt supply chains and unnecessarily. If this is an emergency, you're not going to wait for 75 days to impose this. It's absolutely unnecessary. It is a self-inflicted wound for everyone to try to make people who have been on the front line, for example, for a year and a half, to try to force them to play Russian roulette. Texas also threatened Governor Abbott, and you have the State Attorney General Ken Paxton affirm that Texas has plans to sue the Biden administration. I'll see you in court soon, he tweeted out. I would just caution, however, not to put our trust in the judiciary. If you put your trust in the judiciary, you will find that it is a cane that, when you lean on it, will pierce your hand. We've already seen this happen with Obamacare. Ken Paxton, these other people, Attorney General in Texas, they were all part of a lawsuit. Look at the games that they played with Obamacare. They said, well, it's not a mandate against corporations and forcing you to buy a private court. No, it's a tax. Do you think they can't somehow turn around and call this thing a tax to mandate it? I mean, look at the Supreme Court case. Again, there's a lot of really bad Supreme Court cases, aren't there? Just because the Supreme Court issues an opinion That doesn't make it law. That doesn't alter the Constitution. It doesn't even make it wise in most cases. But they will go back to that 1905 case that they love to talk about. And if they get down to the nitty-gritty details and they start telling you the truth, it wasn't about mandating the vaccine. It was about saying, well, you still got to pay the fine. The fine at that time was about $500 or more in today's money. They could make, look at what Biden is talking about. And look at the fines that have been levied against people in airports and on planes. You know, Biden doubled the fine at the airports to $3,000. You've had the FAA impose fines on people who didn't wear masks and sassed the flight attendants of more than $20,000. How much do you think they could fine you for not getting a vaccine? Frankly, there's no limit to what they can do if we allow them to get away with these encroachments. There is no protection against excessive fines, according to these people. All of these fines that I just mentioned are excessive. So when we look at this and whether or not this is going to work, and just think about all the different sleight of hands that they played. They said, well, it's a tax. And then when the Republican Congress removed the tax, they found another prevarication to keep Obamacare going. It's just, these are just convenient lies that they tell people. OSHA cannot dictate personal health care decisions for Missourians, says a statement from the Missouri governor, Mike Parson. Missouri is not under an OSHA state plan, and Parson will not allow state employees to be used to enforce a constitutional action. I think it's important for us to push back on each and every one of these levers that we can. Fight it in the courts, fine, but make sure you do something else, because that is not a reliable method, I don't think. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte called the Biden administration's new mandates gross federal overreach. He said they are unlawful in Montana. Governor Henry McMaster of South Carolina vowed to fight him and fellow, quote, radical Democrats, unquote, to the gates of hell, he said. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy described the administration's unenforceable vaccine rules, as he characterized them, as a case for the 25th Amendment. No, it's a case for the 9th and 10th Amendment. Doesn't mean that he's insane. He knows exactly what he's, well, he doesn't know what he's doing, but his handlers know what he's doing. He doesn't know what he's doing at all. Look, if I were governor, this would be a righteous case for nullification on the 9th and 10th Amendment. And if that didn't work, it'd be a righteous case for secession. But, of course, that's why I'll never be governor. I would never even run like Larry Elder did. No way. The White House needs to be reminded that the states created the federal government, not the other way around. This is exactly right. So you've already got some governors, you know. Governor Doug Burgum of North Dakota said that. The White House needs to be reminded that the states created the federal government, not the other way around. He's hinting at, and I wish you would quote the 9th and 10th Amendment, he's hinting at that. You know, we created the federal government, and the powers, not rights, states don't have rights, states have powers, individuals have rights. So the powers that have not been delegated to the federal government cannot be assumed. And if they are not specifically enumerated, you don't have those powers. Those powers are reserved to the states, and those rights and powers are reserved to the people. That's the 9th and 10th Amendment. Another governor, Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, said governors don't report to Joe Biden. Governors don't report to the federal government. Exactly right. That's why we have a division, a separation of powers. We have a separation of power between the federal government, the states that created the federal government, and we the people. And then within the federal government, they further divided power. Why did they do that? Because they were afraid that the government would become consolidated. That was their greatest fear, and that is a reality under which we live now. It has become consolidated into a top-down pyramid structure with a judiciary at the top. He says, the states created the federal government and Joe Biden has stepped out of his reach, said Arizona Governor Doug Ducey. The mandates are outrageous. They will never stand up in court. We must and will push back. So the problem is that even though he knows what the powers are, I don't think any of these governors, North Dakota, Doug Ducey, any of them, I don't think any of them are going to really stand behind the 9th and 10th Amendment. They will appeal to judicial supremacy. So even as they're saying, we have a separation of power between the federal government and the state governments, when within the federal government, they're still appealing to the judiciary to decide everything. Again, going back, you know, this was not the case. This was not the way that America was designed. Thomas Jefferson said that. He dissented against the, you know, he said, no, if you go along with this Marbury versus Madison, where the Supreme Court says we will determine what is and what is not allowed. He said, well, then you just lost your government. We had Andrew Jackson, who, in his action, and again, I don't agree with his action, but when the Supreme Court ruled against him, he said they've made their decision. Let's see them enforce it. And he went ahead and did what he wanted to do. Kay Ivey, you know, the same one who was just agonizing about how she couldn't force people to get vaccinated. Now she's out there saying she's going to fight back against this. See, this is how this works. If it were Trump, no, this would be happening. But because it's not Trump, they'll talk about this. And I don't know if they're going to do anything about it. We'll see what happens. Biden had said in December 2020, last year, after the election, he said, I don't think it should be mandatory. I wouldn't demand it to be mandatory, the coronavirus vaccines, the Trump shots. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy tweeted that out and said he lied. Yeah, he did. And so did Pelosi. I played those things for you yesterday. Ron DeSantis is previewing what Florida is going to do about this, though. And again, DeSantis is far from perfect, but he has done really more to push back against some of these things. I mean, he hasn't done anywhere near enough. Not near enough, but he has done some things to push back. He said, I would just say generally when you're taking action that is unconstitutional, that threatens the jobs of people in my state, many, many thousands of jobs, I'm standing for them. He said, we live in a constitutional system where people's rights are respected, but particularly in this juncture, their livelihoods and their jobs have to be protected. He said the Biden mandates are totally counterproductive. He talked about how it was going to destroy society, make shortages for everybody on everything. And so what is he going to do about it? Well, one of the things he has said is that he will put out fines of $5,000 per infraction, and this will not just be against companies. It will also be against cities and counties that comply with Biden's mandate and force employees to get vaccinated. So it'll also be protecting public employees, not just private employees. $5,000 per. This could get into a bidding war of fines, really, I guess. He said, we're not going to let people be fined because of a vaccine mandate. DeSantis said that Biden's mandate violates a Florida law, SB 2006, which bans private businesses from requiring customers to provide proof of COVID vaccination or vaccine passports. He said the Florida law also applies to governments. The last thing a government should want to do, said DeSantis, is, quote, plunge people into destitution, potentially, who have been faithfully serving and working in a variety of capacities throughout this entire time. But that is exactly what the Great Reset is about. That is exactly what the lockdown of last year was about, that Trump financially incentivized and triggered the legal requirements under the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act. Again, the rehearsal for this, the first one was in latter June, early part of July 2001, just a couple of months before 9/11. The week after 9/11, a false flag with anthrax attack. 2 months later, they had already crafted legislation to send to the states as models, to get the states to enact as much of this as they could. Then that was triggered by Trump's executive order 549 days ago, as well as him financially incentivizing this and giving, in most cases, more money to the governor to spend at his discretion, several times more money than the state budget in virtually every state. You had Newsom go from a deficit of, I forget what it was like $9 or $10 billion, and he went to a surplus of 75. Why? That was because Trump gave it to him. You want to talk about all the money that Soros has given him to campaign for re-election? How about the money that Trump gave him? That's part of this declaration of a national state of emergency. So, in Washington State, dozens of Washington State patrol troopers Firefighters and other state and local government employees filed a lawsuit Friday against the Democrat governor there, Jay Inslee. The complaint listed more than 90 individual plaintiffs. They said that Inslee's mandate requiring all state employees to be vaccinated overstepped his legal authority and violated the workers' constitutional rights. His office crafted the religious exemption to be, quote, as narrow as possible, said the lawsuit. The complaint also contends that his order will result, quote, in certain political and religious classes being purged from civil service. That's the point as well. So the people, the firefighters, the state troopers, other state and local government employees, they know that this is to purge out anybody that doesn't have the Democrats' orientation in terms of politics. The purpose of this by Biden is to purge out people who support the Constitution and the Bill of Rights out of the military. It is also, as DeSantis pointed out, to plunge us all into destitution. This is not unintended consequences. These are consequences that they've been planning for over 20 years, specifically this. I mean, this is a longer-term agenda than that, for sure. But the specifics about the lockdown, keeping everybody locked down with as draconian a measures as possible while a untested vaccine is put out and mandated, that was practiced every year at least once for 20 years by Johns Hopkins, the CDC, and other government officials. They know exactly what they're doing. And it is in lockstep, no pun intended, with the Rockefeller simulation, but it is in lockstep with the globalist organizations. It also argues in this lawsuit that Governor Inslee's open-ended COVID-19 emergency declaration is an unreasonable use of temporary power. There's no such thing as temporary power. Once they get this, they will not let it go. That's why it has to be taken out of their hands. And we're not going to win this, I don't think, in the courts. The courts will not remove this power. But we can always try. By axiom, they said, an event that is lasting over 20 months is not an emergent event. It is also not an emergency if you're going to tell people that they must get this 2 or 3 months from now. Commerce Secretary Raimondo. Everybody loves Raimondo, right? No, not really. She was a horrible governor out of Rhode Island. She's now Biden's Commerce Secretary. She went on with Stephanie Ruhle on MSNBC. And she said, I see this is a huge step forward to getting people back to work, to having the economy recover. Can you believe that? I mean, we're talking about a situation where you're going to purge the most productive people. I mean, the people who are refusing to do this, for the most part, are people who have jobs. And so you're going to get rid of first responders. You're going to close down hospitals. You're going to create all kinds of supply shortages everywhere. And you're going to say this is having the economy recovered? It's exactly the opposite. It's a plan for destitution and control. And so Stephanie Ruhle at MSNBC said, I'm puzzled by people that continue to say that they're forced to get vaccinated here. There's always been a choice. If you don't want to get vaccinated, you can work from home. You can homeschool your children. You can shop online. I guess you can, you know, if you're the nurses in New York at that hospital, maybe you can deliver babies from home by Zoom or something. How does that work? It's absolute nonsense. And then Raimondo said, oh, you're exactly right. Nobody is being forced. See how cynical these liars are? Just the cynicism. The cynicism is even worse than the lie. Nobody is being forced. In fact, if you don't get vaccinated, you'll just have to be tested on a weekly basis. So, yeah, going to that New York City hospital, again, that's they closed their maternity ward. I am sure that nobody is closing down any abortion facilities in New York. The hospital said, well, we're not responsible. We're going to make sure that we're not responsible for the transmission in and out of our facilities because of unvaccinated workers. Again, there is absolutely no question. It's been admitted that there is no difference in viral load between vaccinated and unvaccinated people. None whatsoever. There is no case for doing this. As a matter of fact, I've talked about other studies. The one that was out of Vietnam, I talked about how they pushed back against the summary of that. They said, well, okay, the vaccinated this year have a viral load that is 251 times higher than the unvaccinated of last year because nobody had vaccines last year. And yet what they didn't do, the dog that didn't bark here, is they didn't do a study between the unvaccinated this year and the vaccinated. Do the unvaccinated not get Delta? I think they probably don't, because I think Delta is what they're labeling the symptoms of the people who've gotten vaccinated. But anyway, the CDC and all these organizations will admit now that there is absolutely no difference between, they'll say, there's no difference between the viral load of the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. I tend to think that it's higher, but you know, we don't have any proof of that. They chose not to look at that for some reason. But it is the same. So there's absolutely no reason to talk about transmission as being a factor in requiring people to get vaccinated. That is off the table. So they said that the hospital's vaccination rate is 73%. 165 employees are still unvaccinated, and it's not clear what they will do. Well, I think it is clear what they will do. They will not get vaccinated. That's 27% of the facility. The hospital boss indicated that he hopes that the maternity ward will not be closed permanently. Well, you know, but they might. Because, you know, we only need to worry about aborting babies in New York. State Health Department data shows that 20% of hospital workers and 24% of nursing home workers have refused to inject themselves with experimental gene therapy. So what do they know? And why were they not a problem for the last 20 months? And why will they suddenly become a problem 2 months from now? There's also, in New Mexico, you have healthcare workers who refuse to get vaccinated. You have the White House chief of staff admitted, kind of tangentially, that this is a workaround for the Constitution. Again, Stephanie Ruhle, who seems to be at the very center of this for MSNBC, posted and said, OSHA is doing this vax mandate as an emergency workplace safety rule. This is the ultimate workaround for the federal government to require vaccinations. In other words, a workaround of the Constitution. Jonathan Turley, who's a lawyer, says, well, that may come back to bite them. Yes, he retweeted that, which is why. The White House chief of staff retweeted that, indicating that he agrees with this. But, of course, they can still argue that in a court of law, but the other side is going to argue that that is exactly why they're doing this, as a way to work around it. But, of course, we know that all the corporate coercion is a workaround the Constitution. L.A. police officers have filed a lawsuit against the city over the mandates. Six LAPD employees, including individuals who could not assert a medical or religious exemption, as well as individuals who have experienced and recovered from COVID-19. And then we have this guy chiming in.
If we get the overwhelming proportion of the population vaccinated, we will get to herd immunity. I would support that. If you want to get on a plane and travel with other people, that you should be vaccinated. When you hear us say, should you mandate vaccination for children to be able to attend school? Some people say, oh my goodness, that would be terrible to do that. But we already do that and have been doing that for decades and decades. I don't know what school you went to, but the school that I went to, you had to be vaccinated for measles, mumps, rubella, polio, or otherwise you couldn't go to school.
He's lying.
So it is not something new to mandate vaccines for school children. The solution that we have at our hands is vaccines.
Yeah, you know,
they got to get the shot. Vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
And what was that about? That was in 2019. You see, Fauci is a couple of decades older than I am. I did not have to have measles shots. I had measles. I didn't have to show that I had had the measles to prove that I had immunity to them. It was not a requirement. Not for mumps either, not for rubella. I never had rubella, but it was not a requirement for those. I have long-term lasting immunity, unlike the people who get the MMR shots and then have to get a booster. You got to get a booster a few years down the road, maybe. And, you know, we had these outbreaks in New York in the past that I've reported on, where everybody that was part of it, including patient zero, had been multiply vaccinated for measles, and yet they had measles. It's more serious as an adult, but it's not a serious disease. I mean, anybody can have an adverse, you know, you can have a fall, and a fall can kill you. But people have falls all the time. People would get measles all the time. I've talked to everybody my age, and again, he's decades older than me, and I've said that about Trump as well. Both Trump and Fauci know that's a lie. Now, what has changed is they were not required when we went to school. Not where I went to school. Maybe he went to some globalist training school, but it was not required. He lived in New York. I lived in Florida, but it was certainly not required in the Florida schools. But what really changed, and it just changed in 2019, where you heard Trump say that, what changed was they removed the religious and medical exemptions for kids, and even did it for private schools, even did it for private religious schools that had not only medical but religious issues with this. And that was a fight that was happening in New York, and that's why they asked Trump about that. So that is an absolute lie. Again, he said, when you hear say you should mandate vaccination for children to be able to attend school. Some people say, oh my goodness, that would be a terrible thing to do. But we already do that, and we've been doing it for decades and decades, lied Fauci. And then, of course, he wants to go to another level and mandate vaccines to get on a plane and to fly. So, you know, if they've got an experimental vaccine and you decide that you don't want to try it, then they say no try, no fly. Just like no jab, no job, no shot, no shop. We're going to make this a condition of living your life. How many times have they directly said that? We're going to have a vaccinated economy, and if you want to participate in it, you're going to get a vaccine. Otherwise, you're going to be shut out of the economy. You're going to be shut out of everything. You will not buy, sell, trade, get an education, travel, do any of these things without injecting what I tell you to inject into your body. It is preparation for the mark of the beast at the very least. What's the matter with these religious figures? Leaders. Yeah, they are leaders leading you straight into this. So you have legislation that's been introduced with this. We now have, as I pointed out last week, and as I pointed out earlier, the Daily Wire. Now, this is Ben Shapiro's publication. The Daily Wire has, founded by Ben Shapiro. They announced on Friday that they will be resisting the Biden administration's vaccine requirements for employers. Shapiro said in an appearance on Fox and Friends that the Daily Wire will not be complying with the new rule. He said, we're going to use every method and resource at our disposal to defy the president's unconstitutional order. The Daily Wire does have more than 100 employees, but we will not be enforcing Joe Biden's unconstitutional, tyrannical vaccine mandate, said the co-CEO. You see, Shapiro is the CEO and founder. Jeremy Boring, I guess is the way you pronounce his name. Shapiro has railed against the vaccine plan on Twitter and on Fox News, calling it tyrannical, calling it unconstitutional. He says, I'm vaccinated. I'm pro nearly everybody getting vaccinated. And this is tyrannical, authoritarian, and anti-science BS, he said. The problem is, as a mediaite points out, he has been pushing vaccines on everybody for a very, very long time. And he was not just pro nearly everybody getting vaccinated. He wanted everybody to get vaccinated. He wrote an op-ed piece, as a matter of fact, said, anti-vaccine fanatics kill. He wrote that back in 2015. And then in March of this year, listen to this caller who called in to talk to him about the vaccines.
Hi, Ben. Man, this is cool to talk to you. Hope you're doing well. Okay, so I just want to say that I absolutely agree with you on the vast majority of things. I listen every day. I think your show is awesome. But there's one issue where I think we're at an impasse, and I'd like to explain to you why I think you're wrong.
Sure, go for it.
This is March of this year.
Okay, so I want to know how you square your libertarian leaning and pro-life views with mandatory vaccination. And here's why I don't think you can. So for one, there are certain vaccines where aborted fetal DNA is in them. And it's not just a couple of aborted, babies dozens of years ago. Some of these are quite recent. Also, there's vaccines do have risks. And we know they do. There's a federal vaccine court. There is a National Vaccine Injury Compensation Fund where over $4 billion has been paid out to families of people that have been injured by vaccines. So while the risk, in your opinion, might be minimal, it might be minute, is it really worth the common good? Does that trump an individual's right to make a decision about risk benefit for vaccines? And so I'd just like to know what you have to say about that.
Sure. So a few things on this. One, you have to determine that there are differences in my opinions with regard to vaccines that are directly designed to prevent you from getting a disease and ones that rely on herd immunity in order to prevent others from getting a disease.
That's total nonsense.
So, for example, if there was a vaccine that was only the only purpose of it is for you to be vaccinated against a particular disease, but there's no real risk of you becoming a carrier for that disease, for example, then that's totally up to you because obviously it's your choice or not whether to have a disease. If, however, there are certain diseases like mumps, measles, rubella, like MMR, right, which are highly transmissible and where you require herd immunity specifically to prevent against the transmission of that disease to people who cannot have vaccination. So I'm speaking specifically about pregnant women, kids with cancer, right, that sort of thing, and that prevent the transmission of that disease to other people, then you run into the externality problem. And even libertarians believe that externalities are not protected by law, meaning that if you are polluting a river and you are upstream of somebody else, well, sure, it's a river, you're polluting it. But the problem is that pollution is affecting somebody else downstream. You don't have a right to do that, even in the most libertarian sort of.
All right. So he starts to get on the pollution. He went all over the a lot of different things there. But let's just understand what is happening now is that kids with cancer and pregnant women are going to be vaccinated with this. And his whole idea that, well, you know, there are diseases that you get vaccinated for so that you can get herd immunity. And we need to be aware of that. But then there's other diseases where you don't have to worry about that. Let me tell you something. That's absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. If it's not transmissible, then why would you get... There is no vaccine for HIV, right, for that kind of stuff. And if it is not transmissible, I understand he's trying to make a distinction here between how easily it is transmissible. The big argument between Kerry Mullis and Fauci was saying that AIDS was caused by a virus, and Mullis was saying, you can't prove that with my PCR test. So, you know, there's all of that there. But there's also the understanding that everything that you take, whether you're even talking about taking an aspirin, it has a certain amount of risk. And so that's why we need to have informed consent and let people make that determination themselves instead of forcing it upon people to determine what risk you want to take. There is a small risk with measles that you could have very severe complications, but that is extremely, extremely small. They tend to throw away the small risks as something, you know, they're selective in terms of applying that term to different medications. So there's always a risk with any medication. That's why you should be the one making that decision. But just understand when he says anti-vaccine fanatics kill in his op-ed piece back in 2015, what he was essentially saying is that we are terrorists, right? We're terrorizing people. We're killing people. And he was holding to that line as recently as March. Now, I'm happy if he wants to join us on this, but I don't think he's going to join us on the principles. I think he's joining us on the politics. And that's why I'm talking about this, why I'm criticizing Ben Shapiro. He's a political hack. He's doing this for money. He's not doing this out of principle. As a matter of fact, in 2015, when he came out against this, he was very strongly criticizing Chris Christie, who had said in his article, he quoted him, he said, I think parents need to have some measure of choice. He criticized Rand Paul because Rand Paul said, I've heard of many tragic cases of walking, talking, normal children who wound up with profound mental orders after vaccine. The state does not own your children. Well, Ben Shapiro criticize them for that position. He thinks that the state should own your children. He says, your freedom ends where my child's right to live begins. And so he says, no, these guys aren't the only politicians sympathizing with the anti-vaccination fanatics who are killing us. Back in 2008, Barack Obama repeated debunked claims of links between autism and vaccination. And he says, new agey left places in Santa Monica and Marin County who worry about infinitesimally small amounts of formaldehyde in vaccines, more about that than death by polio. Perhaps he's never heard of SV40, simian virus 40, that gave cancer to kids that was in the polio vaccines. Perhaps you should pay attention to the ingredients, Ben. Perhaps you should pay attention to the principles or the lack of them by some of the people that you get your news from that shape your opinions. He said the point of mandatory vaccines is not merely to protect those who are vaccinated. He said it's to protect the herd. And so the reality is that as now they're starting to admit, herd immunity is going to be impossible with these vaccines. Why? Because to have herd immunity, you have to have, first of all, a vaccine that works. Secondly, you have to have a vaccine that lasts. And you need to understand and remember that herd immunity was a term that was developed prior to any of these mass vaccination campaigns. It was merely a restating of Farr's Law. Remember that? The curve? The curve that we're going to flatten 2 weeks ago? But now we're being told in 2 months you're going to lose your job if you don't get the vaccine. That's it for today's broadcast. Thank you for joining us. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.